Hey, welcome everybody to another live episode of the Outlaw Nation show here on the Outlaw Nation channel. I am the Outlaw John Rokin, welcoming you back for another live episode here. A little fun we're going to have tonight. Can't wait to bring in my guest. He is one of the most outspoken, honest, funny, and incredibly talented men that I have had the pleasure and the honor to get to know, and truly the blessing to call a friend here through our experiences in the Schmodown and our experiences in life. I've had many a great conversation, many a bitchy conversation, and many a fun conversation with my friend, for sure. And I always love to sit around with him and occasionally tell our honest feelings about certain things. And we know we're both a safe space for each other, and it's a lot of fun. So I can't wait to bring him on in just a second. But I just want to thank you all so much for joining us live right off the bat. You know, it's always great to see the support for the Outlaw Nation. We're building that little outlet that could. We're pushing up the mountain there. Just crossed 14,300 subscribers. Keep marching we're keeping marching towards 15,000 subscribers and then eventually 20,000 subscribers. That's the game here. Thanks so much to everybody who's been patronizing the content and sharing it also on your social media. Remember, Streamlabs or Super Chats are open. That's how we fund everything we do here on the Outlaw Nation channel. So please show me some love and show my guest some love when he comes on to the show. And a little bit later, some of you get to come in live and ask your questions of me and my guest as we get into so many things. And you know, we got a lot of opinions about a lot of things. So I think everything is on the table for us to be asked about. So no question is too crazy to be asked tonight on the Outlaw Nation show. I ask that you all be respectful with each other in the chat. Maybe civil with each other in chat. You certainly disagree or have fun back and forth, but please, nothing untoward, nothing disrespectful, and nothing beyond the pale. We want to keep it fun, fresh, and lively here, and positive more than anything else here on the Outlaw Nation channel. All right, without further ado, let me welcome to the show. He's a man who is responsible for having written so many incredible pieces of work over the last few years in the world of comic books. He's also a screenwriter, and he is a Schmodown legend as one half of the former tag team champions of the world, the Odd Couple. And he's about to walk into another tag team tournament to maybe give him and his partner, Jeff Snyder, a shot at a tag team title again. You know him from Supergirl. You know him from Manhunter. You know him from so many great projects. Love is Love, which he won the Eisner Award for. He's an incredibly humble guy and one of my favorite people in the world, and somebody who's never shy of an opinion, no matter how controversial or hot takey it might be. And I love that about him. And ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show the great Android himself, Mark Andrako. How are you, man?
That was the most elegant way of saying he's an asshole that I ever heard.
No, I would never say that. I love it, man.
I don't disagree. So.
So how have you been, man? How are things going? You know, the last time we spoke, I think we did stuff for over the weekend for Smash Cancer. Of course, we were on the same feed. But it's been a while since you and I just kind of sat down and shot the shit about stuff. So how are you overall? How have you been dealing with COVID over the last few weeks? Like, how's your life, man?
You know, I'm a writer and I work from home, so arguably not a whole lot changed. Mm. But because there was stuff that I'm not allowed to do.
Yeah.
I miss being like, oh, I'm going to walk to the donut shop and grab a cup of coffee. Or, oh, I'm going to go see him. I don't have anything to do today. I'm going to go see a movie.
Right.
And as misanthropic as I think I am, I realize I actually might like people the more than I want to admit, because it's like the first person I hugged during this, it was like I started crying and I'm like, oh, where is this? Where is this coming from? And it was more that it was like a physical reaction. You know, we are creatures that need touch more arguably than, you know, there's that old experiment with the baby monkey and the wire mom with the milk and the mom covered in fur that was warm and the baby would starve itself for the warmth and the comfort. Right. Of the touch, you know, so hopefully since this is this is a much more affecting us all directly, much more than 9/11 did directly. Hopefully we will be able to keep the empathy that we're getting and just generally be nice and, you know, and breaking up with that abusive boyfriend, that orange boyfriend we had for 4.5 years was certainly, you know, I will never, ever, ever doubt Stockholm Syndrome ever again. And it's amazing how quickly we adapt to shitty situations and convince ourselves they're okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we all think we're like superheroes with wills of steel. We would all confess to murder if we were locked in a room and yelled at for 2 hours, even if we didn't do it. And we would all suddenly start making excuses for our abusive significant other on a metaphorical and a regular level.
Yeah.
Because change scare. I don't know when that happened to us as a species, when the idea of change is frightening.
Yeah.
But life is change.
Right.
You know, so.
The only constant in life is change. Right.
Yeah. And every time you think life is going to be life is great, it goes, fuck you. And vice versa. You know, when you're at your lowest, life can suddenly give you something. I mean, it's I don't understand the fear of like learning new things and experiencing new things. If you try it, if you don't like it, that's okay.
Right.
You know, I did that when Manhunter first came out because, you know, gosh, 15 years ago now.
Yeah.
Because it was a character, that name had been used by like 10 different characters at DC, and it was a female character back then. People would be like, oh, that sucks. And I would go on the message boards and say, have you read it? And they'd be like, no. They're like, well, give me your address. I'll send you some copies.
Yeah.
If you don't like it after you read it, great. But saying you don't like a book before you read it is like going to a restaurant and going, oh, the food's here awful. I don't like the font on their menu. there's a cognitive dissonance there. And consequently, I got lots of, you know, I only had a handful of people of the hundreds of copies I sent out say, it's not really my thing, but thank you. Because I can't ask someone to spend money on my work if I wouldn't spend the money on the work myself.
Right, right, right. I understand that completely. Well, I mean, the thing is, where you're at right now, you say you're writing at home. Is there something that you're working on right now? Have you been working on a number of projects? You know, because Supergirl was the last thing you were jumping onto that a lot of people were all about. And of course, you had that self-published comic book a few years ago as well. But like, is there anything you're working on now that you're incredibly excited about?
Yeah, but it's all, you know, I'm looking at some creator-owned stuff. Mm-hmm. And talking to, there's a couple licensed things I would like to throw my hat into. And then I've got some other media stuff. I've got some TV stuff that looks like it could happen.
Wow. Okay.
But until that does, you know, I've been at the finish line before. And then it was like the football field in Dark Knight Rises. So,
yeah.
You know. I mean, there's definitely stuff going on. I hate to sound like that Hollywood douche. It's like, I can't really talk about it, but I literally can't really talk about it, but there's the potential for 2021 to almost make 2016 through 2020.
Yeah.
Palatable. I won't say make me forget about them, cause we should never forget.
Yeah.
But, I can't complain. It's weird though, having the potential of good career-changing things happening in the middle of all this. Because I was raised Catholic, so it's always a battle of, when is this going to bite me in the face, or when is this going to be taken from me in the most emotional way? Yeah, well, I don't deserve. So, you know, thankfully I have a mom who's like, you've been doing this for 30 years, relax, you're allowed to enjoy things. I'm like,
right,
thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being the good version of Jiminy Cricket that won't take my bullshit.
That's awesome. Just to let you all know, we do, as I said, we've got the Streamlabs and Super Chats open right above Mark's head is the Streamlabs address. Send them in. Send in your Super Chats. Let's have some fun. Let's have some great questions and great conversations here tonight. Lord knows it's crazy out there. So, you know, the show, I've always liked having the show every week as a place for people to come and have some fun and kind of forget about all the madness that's going on in the world and maybe get touched by some of the stories that are shared or some of the connections that are had here on the show. Mark, that's one of the things that I've always been kind of surprised at how quickly we became friends and how quickly the conversations would go to the place of like being open and honest. This has always been something that I've admired about you. Is this something that you've always been since you were a child like this? No. Oh, okay. Talk to me about that.
No. You know, I was always the kid that got good grades and, you know, liked comic books and stuff like that. And when I was a kid, you know, it was probably easier to be a gay kid than to be a comic book fan. You know, people, there was still the residual comic books rot your brain that 1950s were them bullshit. You know, and then, you know, I'd grown up, learned to read from comic books, wanted to draw them for a while, then realized I didn't have the discipline to, you know, when I had an image in my head, I wanted it out, and I didn't have the willingness or the innate ability to do that. I can draw passably for someone, but no one would buy it. And then, you know, in 1985, I was homesick with the flu, and there was a show on called Moonlighting, and I watched it, and I said, oh, I want to do that. I didn't know what that was.
Right.
And for the young people out there in the audience, if you've never watched Moonlighting, Moonlighting's DNA is on every single television show you enjoy right now. I can draw a straight line back from anything from Battlestar Galactica to Big Little Lies. I can draw straight the DNA from Moonlighting. Mm-hmm. It was a show that was much like it burned brightly and burned out fast. Right. But it was an amazing show. And then I majored in theater in college, and then this is going to sound like it's getting dark, but it's not going to get dark. I promise. I'm fine with it. In 1992, my best friend died in a plane crash in New York City.
Oh my God.
And that really, really changed my whole outlook on life, on going after things that you're passionate about,
right.
Living passionately, living honestly. And, you know, it goes without saying that, of course, I would love to have my friend alive and have that never happened.
Yeah.
But that's a moment in my life that changed me on an almost chemical level. This, if my 16-year-old self met this, I don't know what I maybe join the priesthood. I don't know. And then as you get older, you know this. As you get older, once you hit 35 and then 40 and on, if you ask me a question, I'm assuming you want the answer from me, mm-hmm. and vice versa. That doesn't mean That doesn't mean being aggressive. That doesn't mean being mean. It just means there's a shorthand. If you want me to blow smoke up your ass, let me know.
Right.
And I'll get another friend. But this is a finite existence we have here. Mm-hmm. I don't have enough time to, like, for example, you know, you're with someone, they go, and you're like, what's wrong? Nothing. Well, then I'm going to believe you. I'm not going to keep asking. You had your shot.
Right.
You know, Maya Angelou famously said, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. And when someone answers a question you ask with a definitive answer, believe it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to come fishing.
Right. That's not your jam. I know that's not your jam. It never has been. Or it hasn't been in my experience. It hasn't been. You know, you've been doing so many projects over the years, man. Do you find that you gravitate to one set of characters over another in terms of DC or Marvel? Or are you the kind of guy that just kind of rolls into a character? If the character speaks to you, or you can put a spin on it that makes speaks to you artistically, then you jump on it?
The answer is kind of yes to both of those.
Okay.
The reason one doesn't work at one company or another has nothing to do with characters and more to do with regimes and current market tastes and friends at the company. I mean, you know this business.
Right.
You know, your relationships get you in the door. Hopefully you have enough talent to stay there after that.
Right.
And you know, I grew up learning to read from Spider-Man. You know, so I have a deep and abiding love for the Marvel characters. You know, I've spent more time recently in the DC universe, but, you know, COVID has made everything so up in the air. Who knows what the comic book will look like in 10 years. You know, people have been talking about the end of the comic book since they were first being published, you know.
Right.
I think in ancient Rome, they were like, the end is nigh and comic books will never survive. And so it's, you know, it's globally tough for everyone with the shutdown. And hopefully what we're going to see after this with our new political regime is some of these giant conglomerates get broken up. Because if anything, it's proven that these conglomerates are loyal to no one but their stockholders, you know. The bigger the conglomerates, the longer copyright law gets extended. And public domain is a necessary engine of art. Every story can be traced to a story before it. That doesn't mean a ripoff.
Right.
But Superman's sort of like Jesus meets Moses or Gilgamesh. I mean, you can follow the through lines back for that. And for things to be, I don't mind the creator during their lifetime and even maybe for 50, 75 years after their lifetime. So they're, so they're kids. But after that, you know, J.K. Rowling's great-great-great-great-grandchildren shouldn't be billionaires.
Right. Right.
And that's for copyright law. There's also reasons because she's an asshole. But I've never seen anyone shit on their legacy so actively for no good reason.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that. That's a nice little segue into something here. I mean, this is all happening now because it's topical because of the Johnny Depp situation and the Amber Heard situation. And now we throw on top of that, obviously, earlier, the J.K. Rowling situation. Like, you're watching this from a distance to a degree. And are you just like, do you think there's just this whole next section of Harry Potter is just somehow cursed or doomed? Because it wasn't like, you know, it seemed like a cash grab rather than actually transferring these books that were so essential to people's childhood.
The whole thing, the whole Fantastic Beasts thing feels like arrogance. It feels like I'm going to write all these myself because they took my books and made the movies. I can do that. And right. Some people can. Yep. Some actors can do the stage and the screen. Some actors can, you know, Patti LuPone is hard to watch on television because she acts for the rafters, and that's not an insult, but she is definitely, she's definitely an actress who's made for the stage.
Right.
Whereas like, you know, I don't know, Tobey Maguire is so much more internal. The close up serves him.
Right.
And I think the fact that we're now two movies deep into this franchise and the second one was called The Crimes of Grindelwald. What did he do?
Yeah.
If that's your title, give me something.
Right.
And once again, if she created the characters, it's hers. It's like when people complained about George Lucas's prequels. She created all this stuff. If she wants to destroy it, fine, creatively.
Yeah.
But the whole transphobia thing, I don't know why that's a hill she wants to die on.
Yeah.
It seems odd. It makes no sense to me. And talk about punching below your weight. Trans people, if you're a trans person in this on this planet, you have had a rough life.
Yeah.
Whether emotionally, you know, the number one and number two causes of death for the trans community are suicide and homicide. So right. I don't need some rich billionaire white lady getting pissed and perpetrating tropes. Like in her new book, the name Richard Gilbraith that she writes under is apparently a notorious anti-trans person in British history. Right. Right. And she has a transvestite killer. Right. Do you know how many transvestite or transgender serial killers there have actually been? None. It's a trope that was invented in the 50s and perpetrated by Brian De Palma in Dressed to Kill. And because, you know, they don't exist. And for her to keep doing this and like getting angry that we're trying to make it, it breaks my heart because having her let us use Harry Potter for Love is Love was a huge moment for me. And those books are so important. I have those books and, you know, I've been organizing as everyone has done during this lockdown. And I don't need the Harry Potter books anymore. Not because even regardless of her attitude, I'm just never going to read them again before I die. Right. And I was thinking, oh, what friends of mine have kids that I want to give them to? And then I thought, do I want to give these to a kid? Because do I want a kid to invest in this world and fall in love with this world? And then find out the woman who wrote this is an awful human being.
Right.
I don't want to crush a kid. I mean, and distance makes it okay, I guess. Because I mean, Roald Dahl was a racist. And
right. Know,
distance from you, but the immediacy of this and the lunacy of it, I don't understand what her point is here.
Right. And people get upset because you're like, well, you're ruining something that was used to bring people together from different, you know, there's something that people could talk about from different upbringings, different races, different experiences. They found solace in these books, and now you're ruining that solace by, you know, being overtly transphobic. And she's being overtly transphobic. Oh, it's not some kind of subtle thing. No,
aggressively transphobic. Yeah,
aggressively.
And then seeing it through that prism, you go back and look at stuff, and then you're like, oh, I guess we saw some of this before.
Yeah.
I mean, her Asian character's name is Cho Chang. Yeah. Really? That's the first name you came up with? Was right. Ching Chang Chong taken? I mean, you hear and then you think about the goblins, and they're very much like the anti-Semitic characters in the Star Wars prequels. That, you know, they all have exaggerated features and are all, you know, and maybe that's projecting.
Mm.
But she opened that door. Stuff that I would never have thought twice about.
Yeah.
Now hearing those interviews makes me go back and look at that stuff, and it's a bummer to all the people involved.
Right.
Because Daniel Radcliffe doesn't need to be apologizing for her.
Right. Or Eddie Redmayne doesn't need to be defending her, which he kind of was after everyone else had chimed in. But of course, you know, he's got that next installment.
And her, Yeah. And her defending Johnny Depp is just, you know, so on brand. You know, it's like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, well, let's take a look. But also, like, I know someone's mentioning it here in the chat. I want to draw, like, another sample of this is what is happening right now with Gina Carano. You know, it's kind of frustrating.
She blocked me.
Yeah, she blocked me, too, the other day. It's crazy. But it's starting to become something where you're like, well, I don't understand why you're part of something like this, like the universe of Star Wars. Or
she ain't going to be much longer.
Yeah.
Ain't going to be. Trust me. Trust me. Disney is watching that franchise so carefully after the failure of Solo and the dislike of the last two sequels.
Yeah.
Trust me. She is talking herself out of a job, and she will be on OAN with Scott Baio and John Voight and Ted Nugent and all the other Love Boat from Hell rejects who couldn't fill a two seat theater on their best day.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't understand why that's a hill to die on. And it's just ridiculous. And then she was, of course, she's on Parler.
Yeah.
Which my friend, which I love, my favorite of the names for that is Mindspace.
Oh yeah. Mindspace.
And it's just like, I just don't know who these people, who is surrounding these people to not say, you might feel this way, but shh.
Yeah.
Shh.
That's the thing that's perplexing, Mark. You know, if you look at both of these situations, yes, JK, of course, she's the queen bee of her kingdom there with the Harry Potter stuff.
And let me interject just one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
JK Rowling has done immense amounts of great things.
Yes.
Getting little children to stay up till midnight to go buy books, making reading sexy, engaging kids' imaginations. That's why this is so heartbreaking for me, because it's like Jonas Salk invented the polio vaccine and then released HIV.
Wait
a minute. How are those two things from the same person?
That's the frustrating part of it all, because you're just like, well, what happens here? Like, if you track the Gina Carano thing, you're like, well, what? Listen, you were straight to DVD crappy action films actress. Like, you, Soderbergh gave you a shot. Giacomo had to voice your entire role over just to make that film palatable. And then you're doing crappy action films that no one is going to go see. They're going straight to DVD or streaming or whatever. And you're working with not really that great talent. And then Favreau and Filoni give you a shot to resuscitate your career. And within one season, you're already torpedoing it for some political stand you want to make. And you're smirking all through your posts. And you're thinking you're being cute, when in fact and then you're claiming that you want unity. I don't get it.
Yeah, there's nothing worse, as we've just seen for the past 4.5 years. There's nothing worse than an utter moron who thinks they're a genius.
Hmm. Great point.
You know, and I will say this, I didn't know who the hell she was until this shit came out. I knew she was like an MMA fighter and was in one of those Soderbergh movies that I wouldn't see, that was, you know, he did 35 movies on his phone.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about her.
Yeah.
And it's insane. It's insane. Obviously she doesn't have a publicist, because if she did, they quit, because they'd be like, you need to shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she's doing simple.
She's doing it. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, be a racist, be an anti-Semite, be a homophobe, be a transphobe. Just don't fucking tell anybody about it. If that's your thing, what I don't know won't hurt me.
Right.
But this need of people who are in the public eye to suddenly, I mean, myself being one of here, I am pontificating. Who the fuck am I? I'm just some douchebag in California.
It's just
crazy, because these things are said, and there is obviously no thought put into them whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of mind-blowing to me, because you get these people, because so many people, Mark, and you know this from knowing so many creatives here there in Los Angeles, it's kind of weird to get used to saying there in Los Angeles, but like you.
That's why you look so much younger now, because you left.
Maybe. Those creatives, though, are people who would kill to be in the position that Carano is in. To be in a position to be playing a part that is now, you know, people know this name, Cara Dune. People know this character. People do art for this character. There's going to be, you know, there's already figures out for this character, and she's coming back to ruin that by doing that. It just makes no sense.
There are few roles, if any, that are unrecastable.
Yeah.
And she ain't Carrie Fisher, and she ain't Mark Hamill, and she ain't Kenny Baker. So she better watch it, because, you know, that's the other thing. Just be quiet, because if you get a penny from every figure that thing with your face on it,
right,
you don't have to work again.
Yeah.
You know, and when conventions are allowed again, who's going to book her for an autograph signing at a convention? Who's going to risk that?
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's the thing you run into, you know? So you just wonder, you know, and everyone's got their own journey to go on, and clearly she's on some
and
journey.
Hers is right off a cliff, apparently.
She's going somewhere, that's for sure. We'll see what happens, but I'm always perplexed by these people who do these kinds of things, because it isn't like okay, you're not allowed to believe what you believe. Sure, you can believe what you believe, but you also got to read the room and understand, well, what's best for me. So I don't want to hear what she's been claiming, that she got bullied off of this or bullied off of that. No, you knew what you were doing when you were saying the things you were saying. Just like JK sitting there trying to act like she's being bullied for like her.
It's gaslighting.
That's true. Yeah.
You can't be on the wrong side of an issue, because I firmly believe they are both absolutely 100% wrong. This isn't saying, should we have Chinese or Italian for dinner? This is, should we go after a group of marginalized people who have from birth onward, the most incredibly difficult lives of anyone will ever know.
Right, right. Or even worse.
Or are we going to be nice to them? Fuck you.
Yeah, yeah. Or even worse, you're advocating anti-mask, anti-social distancing stuff, which can get people killed, especially as states, the entire country and some parts of the world are spiking all over again in higher numbers than ever before. So there's a social irresponsibility to that. If you're representing the brand of Disney, which is about unifying and everybody coming together and being the best person you can be, you're
allegedly
advocating. Allegedly. But you're advocating this kind of thing that can cause people's deaths. It's
insane. And we're going to see, I think, because we're going to get shut down again. Biden's going to have to do it. We're going to probably get shut down for a month, and the vaccine will be distributed, and we'll see what should have happened last February.
Right, right. Good point.
You know, so.
Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're at the half an hour mark. Please, we're at 132 of y'all watching us live. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, everybody,
watching this live. And please hit that like button. Only 62 likes so far, so please send in or hit that thumbs up button. Give us some love here on the Outlaw Nation show. We've got
Gina Carano's just hitting thumbs down over and over and over again.
If she can.
I'm sure she's watching, because what else has she got to do?
That's a good point. Weird on Instagram. Chris Taylor says, can you separate the art from the artist? Yes, of course you can, but it's a subjective thing. Like those people who defend Polanski somehow separate the art from the artist, or a lot of people still defend Woody Allen and then separate the art from the artist. It's all your own personal thing. I just think with something like this, this is an entire group of people that you are subjugating for your own, warped desire to feel above these people or grind some kind of old axe you might have against transphobic people. And the Gina Carano situation, there's not much art here to separate from the artist. So just wonder why. Yeah.
And Woody Allen's never been charged or convicted of anything, so there's still a questionable thing there. And this is not me defending him, by the way. This is me putting this out there as a thing. Roman Polanski's accuser said she doesn't want him prosecuted.
Right.
So people, I can see why people can do the dance around the raindrops and find out how they can still like them. Mm-hmm. Both Gina Carano and J.K. Rowling said shitty, awful things directly from their mouths multiple times.
Yep.
That is different than allegations that you can find whether they're true or not.
Right,
and mileage may vary on that. I have lots of issues about both of those gentlemen as well.
Agreed.
But for the public, for the average movie fan, or they're like, oh, I like it. Well, they claim that happened, but he never got charged, so he must be innocent. These people said, I hate trans people, and they're awful, and they're not, they're less than human, and they should not. No, Nazis talk like that. Sorry.
Right.
So.
Right.
I will separate the art from the artist. I will separate their art from my collection.
And also, to be honest, like this whole idea of cancel culture just drives me insane, because it's not a real thing. We've always had this where someone says the thing that's, you know, crosses that line or is too far, and then you start to find examples of this person doing it multiple times, you just go, you know what? We don't need that person representing us in an entertainment way in any way, shape, or form. Yeah.
Here's a reference you probably won't think I would know, John.
Yeah.
Three words. Jimmy the Greek.
Yeah, Jimmy the Greek.
For those who don't know this, Jimmy the Greek was a sports commentator on CBS for a very long time. Yes, well-respected, sort of a character. Obviously, he had a name like a Dick Tracy villain. And the thing that ended his career, where they were talking about the football, I believe it was the draft.
Yeah.
And he said black men are better football players than white athletes because the slave owners bred them from good stock.
Yep. Yep.
He said that almost, I didn't paraphrase it too much.
Right. He said they
and even the other three guys were like, yeah, commercial.
Yeah, right. He was at the NFL draft. They interviewed him, but I was sitting at one of the tables, and he said the reason for this, and of course he'd had a few drinks, so he thought he let his mouth fly. And yeah. He said the reason this is this happens, and the reason why is because back in the slavery days, the master would pair his big black woman with a big black man, and they would create these kind of super athletes. And you're just like, what the fuck is wrong with you, man?
It's just here's a bit of advice from me today that you can take with you for the rest of your life.
Tell him.
If you are a white person, never say the phrase back in slavery days wistfully.
Yeah, wistfully.
In fact, right. Never say that phrase at all. Let's just,
like
just
Lindsay.
Be safe.
Don't, like
just,
Lindsey Graham.
To bring this full circle, to reference a Woody Allen movie, be like Diane Wiest in Bolts Over Broadway. Don't speak. Don't speak.
Very good point. Let's see. We got some streamlabs that are rolled through here. A Doug developer says, screenwriting guru Robert McKee said in Adaptation, wow them in the end and you have a hit. You can have flaws, problems, but wow them in the end and you have a hit. Is that supposed to be true or an inside joke? Also, what's your take on Robert McKee, Mr. Andreyko?
I think what I get from that first sentence is if you have a great twist, that's what your audience will remember. And look at M. Night Shyamalan's successful, what it gave him a career.
Yeah.
I am not a fan of his Come to Jesus revivals. I went to one and it was very Amway culty for my taste.
Oh, okay.
But I do strongly advocate reading his book Story. Mm-hmm. Because Story is little vignettes. You can put it in next to your toilet and read a couple pages a day. Story isn't him teaching you. Story is him saying, you know all this stuff. Remember it. The metaphor I use is reading McKee's story is like taking a glass of chocolate milk when all the quick settled at the bottom and shaking it back up. It's an empowering book because he basically says to you, you don't know you know this, but you do. And when you're reading, and because it's in vignettes and it's not a textbook. It's little digestible pieces. It's, I think, very helpful. But that being said, as someone who has spent probably thousands of dollars on screenwriting books in his life, there are like three of them that you need: Sid Field's screenplay, McKee's Story, and Adventures in the Screen Trade by the late great William Goldman. All the others are like diet plans. They're all variations on the same thing.
Right. Right. Okay.
In my experience, anyway.
Yeah. Ben _ Rayner said, hey, John and Mark, so great to see the two of you together. Thank you.
Hi, Ben.
I'm curious, since you've written for Supergirl Comics, Mark, have you seen any of the TV show? Just curious your thoughts on the show. Thank you, Roka, for a great show and #SmashCancer. Oh, you're welcome, Ben. But yeah, Mark, have you watched the Supergirl TV show with Melissa Benoist, or do you stay away from it because you're writing?
I did. The timeline I was doing was an entirely different continuity. I thought she was great. I only really watched the first season and a half because once Calista Flockhart was gone, she brought so much to that it felt like her absence was never really filled. People love the show. You know, I'm sure it's still great, but for me, the Cat Grant relationship was so interesting with her that it was sort of like if Luthor wasn't awful, and they got to do stuff in the show you couldn't do in the comic book, like Cat Grant knowing that she was Supergirl and all this stuff. You know, there was some really interesting stuff there. And for me, even in superhero comics, for me, the stuff is character interaction. The fight scenes write themselves. That's all, you know, that's all you tell the second unit and all the CG people, this is what I want. go do it. But you have to care about the characters fighting. And for me, when she left, I was just like, because there's also, too, there's so much stuff on. I'm not going to be able to watch everything I want to before I die, let alone things that I think I might like or would probably like. So, but yeah, but I mean, it's great. If you would have told me 10 years ago, Supergirl would have a show that ran for 7 seasons with that caliber of actors in it, I would be like, no. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible to see that, that's for sure. Are you a fan of the Berlantiverse and what he's creating there? Do you enjoy it?
I don't think they're necessarily for me.
Okay.
Because I am, you know, I don't want to watch a show about a donut shop because I make donuts for a living.
That's fair. Totally fair.
And it's different. It's different with the TV shows than it is with the movies, because the movies are more self-contained. And even something like the MCU, they're bigger events.
Yeah.
Watching a TV show, is especially in this age of binging, is a lot like reading a serialized comic book.
Okay.
You know? And I've seen all of them, and the ones I've seen, I've thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah.
But much like, you know, I think the better example is like Gotham. Gotham wasn't for people that are Batman fans. Gotham was for your parents who took you to a Batman movie.
Right.
They knew just enough about him that would be fun for them. And that's not a bad thing. But I feel like also I'm a little bit old for that demographic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
Fair enough.
the fact there's 8 DC Universe shows and and my mom now knows what a multiverse means is insane. So they're great. And Greg Berlanti is an amazing guy.
Yeah.
Super talented and an amazing, amazing charitable activist. So,
yeah, agreed. Mark, there's a weird smacking noise going on. Is it your mic connection or anything like that? Just wanted to clarify and see if maybe there's
no.
So you guys are okay. All right. So we're fine.
Nope. There's nothing here.
Okay, cool. Just wanted to check. All right, let's move on to Chris Corcoran. He says, Gina Carano even said happy birthday to a toxic YouTube guy who's mocked Pedro Pascal for attacking Star Wars fans. There's a rift between them both. Plus, Pedro is a supporter of the trans community. Yes, he is, because he has a sibling who identifies as a transgender, I believe, if I'm correct on that. And it was a weird weekend because a couple of weekends ago, I had Pedro follow me after I called out Gina Carano for something that she said. And then, like Mark Andreyko revealed earlier a few minutes ago, she blocked me. So it's just like weird to have Pedro. So is there, I wonder if there's a divide here between her and Pedro Pascal, and why? Why would you pick a fight with the lead of the show who you're not even remotely close to that person's level as a talent, as an actor, or as a celebrity? It makes no sense.
It makes zero sense. I don't get it. I don't know what she's thinking. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's mind-blowing, dude. Mind-blowing. Let's see. Buckeye Jet says, those anti-SJW YouTube channels defending Gina Carano for her views were the same people who sent death threats to John Boyega and bullied Kelly Marie Tran off social media solely for being of a different color. Fuck those people and their hypocrisy. All right. Well said, Buckeye Jet. I don't think you'll find anybody disagreeing with you here.
My favorite name to refer to that group of people is Gravy Seals.
Ooh, I don't even know what that means. What does that mean?
Instead of Navy Seals, gravy, because they're all deep fried and eating gravy. Or the other one I like is Y'al-Qaeda.
Y'al-Qaeda is good. I like
know. It's fun to say, too.
Y'all kind of. Schmoes of the North says, as a pansexual man, I will not understand why people can't just see others as humans. No one is better than others. Let's just let people be for who they are. Yeah, I thoroughly agree.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as you're happy and honest and not hurting anybody, none of my business.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Mark, I ask this delicately, but I'll ask this straight up because we're brothers, man. We're friends. Like, as a gay man, you're watching the explosion, you would say, over the last 20 years of an acceptance of gay culture, an acceptance, a more open acceptance of gay characters, of the lifestyle, a rejection.
I would say tolerance more than acceptance.
Oh, fine, a tolerance. But then it's being met by an even harsher rejection or anger of it.
I don't believe that though. I think in any group, whether it's the majority, the minority, or whatever,
yeah,
the media always picks the loudest, most colorful part of that group, the spotlight. And those, whether it is during Gay Pride, where it's all the crazy floats and all the really explicit, overt sexuality, or whether it's the Black Panthers representing the entirety of the African-American experience. And these aren't bad things, but much like a circle is an ellipse, but not all ellipses are circles. There are shared experiences, but those aren't indicative of, and that comes with assimilation into culture. You look at anyone considered exotic, whether it was Black characters or Asian characters or gay characters. Now we're seeing it with trans characters. You start out as exotic, then you become scary, then you become the advisor, then you become the comic relief, then you become the martyr, then you or the villain and the martyr, and then you get to be Adam Pally on Happy Endings. The boring, the gay guy who's out of shape and doesn't dress well and is kind of a vulgarian, and I'm like, I feel seen. So that's the evolution of it. You have to go through all those different facets before you. I love that there are now boring gay characters. That means we've made progress.
Right.
But I do think most people do not care one way or the other if you are gay or straight or trans or poly or bi or non. If you're a good person and you treat people with respect,
people just
want to live their lives and be allowed to be happy.
Yeah.
And I think when you destroyed education the way it has been in this country since Reagan.
Right.
When people are uneducated, they are they're superstitious and scared. And we're doing a great disservice, because I don't believe all 73 million people that voted for Donald Trump are awful.
Right.
A lot of them are, but a lot of them are people that were fed a bill of goods and don't know better. That doesn't absolve them of that.
Right.
But you can't give someone cigarettes and expect them to not get lung cancer or emphysema, you know?
Right.
That's not a great metaphor, but you get the point.
Yeah.
So I do think that hopefully with a new administration, we get a fairness doctrine back in news media. So you can't present propaganda and sedition as news. And I think that, I just think that we've also got to get over the false equivalencies. Just because you have an opinion does not mean I have to respect it.
Yeah.
If your opinion is ill-informed, uninformed, or mean and dangerous, you lose. You don't get a 50% assumption of equality. That sort of false equivalency gaslighting that's been going on.
Yeah.
No. So I don't even know if that remotely answers the question. So
I think it does. So, let's see here. Daniel Haygood says, two of the most knowledgeable and wise minds in the Schmodown. Insert joke here about them also being the oldest.
A century of wisdom.
Right here.
If we were on a team, that's what we would be called.
A century of wisdom. I love it. I would love that. Absolutely. Oh man, but with this whole thing going on though, man, that's a good thing you bring up here. How are you feeling about things now, man? I mean, you've been in this game, the Schmodown, I mean, for so many years, brother. Like, are you at this stage now where like you're just like, okay, this is now fun. I've come to terms with a lot of the madness of this game, and now I just play to have a good time with Snyder or Solo and being managed by Roxy. Like, have you kind of turned the corner on this whole game now in your mind?
In two ways. I'm done with singles.
Okay, right.
I just, it's just become something that isn't fun for me, and that's not an insult to it at all. You know, kind of like, I think it was, who was it that said it? Maybe it was it Matt Nost that said, when I have the three-ring binders of things to study, it's not fun anymore. That's not an insult to the people who are like Ben Bateman and Kevin Schmetz, who have encyclopedic knowledges and that's their thing.
Yeah.
I like being the guy that's the smartest guy at the table at the bar for bar trivia. I don't need to be Ken Jennings. And once again, that sounds glib and snarky, and I really don't mean it to be.
No, it's just not for you.
Teams is actually so much more. And I think my attitude would change if teams wasn't digital this year. Yeah. Being in a studio, just that level of contact. But playing teams this year has been, I think the last match that Jeff and I played is probably the best match I've ever played.
Wow.
And there's something about over the course of this that, you know, Jeff and Roxy and I have talked a number of times, and Jeff has become a good friend, you know, and I enjoy it. And when you're playing with a teammate, it allows you, I think, in my opinion, it allows you to access more of the knowledge you have that you might not remember, because I can go, oh, I don't need to know 2010 art films that I didn't see because Jeff sees them all for free to review them. Right. But I can. That means I can double down on costume dramas or musicals or something else. That doesn't mean I don't know anything about those things, but it means I know that there's someone there. Because you don't want to be on a team with someone whose strengths are exactly the same as yours. It doesn't. Right. It serves no purpose.
Right. Fair point.
Yeah. I'll keep playing teams as long as I'm having fun or they'll have me. You know, I think eventually I'll probably transition into being a manager just because that's fun. Yeah. And once again, not to be Hollywood douche part two, but if some of these projects I have go, I might have to recede a little for the calendar. It all depends. But that being said, I'm having a blast right now. I'm having so much fun right now because the people we've gotten to play so far are like a murderer's row. I mean, the baseline player in Schmodown now is really, really good.
Yeah, right. That's the thing and you find out
annoying.
Now.
Annoying.
Right, you can't just kind of roll into a match knowing you'll take care of business and roll on out. You've got to definitely be in a frame of mind to handle anyone you face now in the Schmodown, and it certainly has grown in that way. It's great to hear that, you know, because it's great to hear that you're moving. Like, there's a lot of people here talking about, is there a possibility that Emma Fife comes back to the game? We haven't seen her that much that often. Is that someone you still talk to and still have communication with? Yeah,
absolutely. And I think we're going to see a lot of people that retired come back once we have a vaccine.
Just because
it's going to be like those beagles released from that medical lab walking on grass for the first time. They're going to be like, oh my God, you're real. I mean, the PTSD we're going to have after this, after Trump and COVID, we're going to be giving flowers to people and hugging and, you know, it's going to be like Hair, the musical, but globally. I think we're going to see a really interesting level of energy and a really interesting, I think we're going to see more fun competition once we're back in the studio together. That doesn't mean it won't be as serious, but I think ultimately, you know, I said this on different shows, when you get to be our age, I don't look to make new friends.
Right.
I'm not adverse to it, but I'm not actively looking for it because, you know, your friends are your family and family is exhausting under the best of circumstances, myself included. And doing Schmodown, I now have like 15 or 20 new people who I consider friends. And of those 20, probably 8 to 10 of them who I consider really good friends. That never happens when you're an adult.
Yeah, right. It's a good point.
Unless you're in a cult, you know, that. And what's great about Schmodown is we have like-minded interests, but we don't all do the same thing. So we all have things to talk about to another person.
Right.
Our experiences aren't entirely shared. They're all complementary to each other. So there's always something to talk about. And it's really, really a byproduct you would never think, I would never think would come from something like this.
Absolutely.
But I enjoy hanging out with my friends from Schmodown, regardless of whether Schmodown is going on or not.
Yeah, yeah. I don't disagree with you at all.
Except for Ellis. He's an asshole.
Behind the scenes, you guys don't know. Just an utter jerk off.
The nicest, an annoyingly good human being. I long to be as good as Mark Ellis is just for 10 minutes in my life.
He's
truly one of the great guys and the humblest, sweetest, most gentle, would literally give you the shirt off his back. I hate using those old hoary cliches, but it's absolutely true. He is just, I want to be him for, like I said, 10 minutes because it's obviously fucking awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Unflappable guy.
And smart. And smart. Stand-up comedians can be insufferable.
Yeah.
And he is just delightful.
He's that rarity. Because he doesn't talk down to anyone. He's always appreciative when anyone steps up and has a kind word for him. And he's always,
always listening. When you're when he's talking to you, he's talking to you. He's not doing the checking the room to see who more interesting is. When you're with him, that's the conversation.
Yep.
He's engaged and it's never anything less than 100% with him. It's really amazing. I've got to assume he's a serial killer because we'll find out after he died because anyone that consistently good of a person has got to have some real weird stuff in them.
Yeah, agreed. Let me bring Sean in real quick before he has to go. It's my producer on the show. He's going to talk to people about how they can come in to the chat live to ask questions. My Outlaw Nation patrons who donate at the $10 above level, you do get first dibs to come in, get that link early. Should have had in the Discord already. And then other people who are watching now, you can come in and ask Mark Andreyko and me any questions you want to ask. Remember, Mark is a comic book creator. He's a writer, a screenwriter. He's done so many things in the Schmodown and in life. So, you know, don't limit your questions, ladies and gentlemen.
Can I say this? Can I say something I've never said before?
Sure.
Ask me anything. I've never done one of them.
There you
go. I now feel AMA. Like I've finally gotten my last YouTube achievement ring.
There you go. AMA. Please accompany it with a Streamlabs super chat. But yes, an AMA would be great. All right, Sean, let's bring you in. What's up, brother, man?
How's it going, gentlemen?
How are you, sir?
I'm talking to Andreyko. John,
thank you. It's so mad he didn't get a PS5 this one.
Oh, here we go. Go ahead. So, Outlaw Nation, welcome. If you guys have been here for the first time, please leave a like. And if you're watching us post, please leave a like and a comment. It does help out the algorithm of YouTube. So if you're part of the Discord, the link is in the chat or is in the Discord already. So when you click on the link, it will bring you to StreamYards and it will ask you to verify your mic and your camera. I know someone's in the chat. Please verify your mic and your camera, please.
Yeah.
Please probably try to wear headphones because otherwise you might get an echo. Mm-hmm. I'm saying this specifically to the person in the chat. John, you might see someone come back that hasn't been on for a while.
Oh, you'll okay. see. All right. That's good.
After a while, I also will put the link in the chat. So if anybody wants to come in live after that, you'll be able to do so as well. So please try to have one question so we can get through as many people as we possibly can.
Yep. And do you have a question before we leave, Sean?
I normally will, but unfortunately, I don't have time to.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for stopping in. Appreciate it, brother, man. Tell them I said hi.
I will. And I'll keep an eye on the chat still. I promise.
Appreciate it. All right. Thanks, Sean. There you go. My producer there, Sean Berto. Yeah. So we're doing an AMA. Apparently, Mark is putting it on the table. Not ask me anything. Ask Mark anything. An AMA there. He'll answer any of your questions. Please accompany them with a Streamlab or a super chat so we can get into a good position and be in a good place here for this episode of the Outlaw Nation show. Send them in. All right. Let's bring in Mike Shea to ask the first question here. Mike, are you ready to go? Yeah, all right. Let me bring you in. Let me adjust the brand so I don't cover your face. You can ask your question freely here. Mike Shea, say hi to Mark Andreyko. Mark Andreyko, Mike Shea.
Hi, Mark.
Hello, sir.
I got to see you in Chicago last year. That was a lot of fun. It was a great
when we destroyed Bateman and Riley?
Just obliterated. It was fantastic.
When I had my first perfect game, when perfect games meant something?
I'm from Ohio, so it's good to meet you. I also have been blocked by Gina Carano. So
oh, Jesus, it must have been a. I heard something called a blockchain. I had no idea what it was, but apparently you can block a chain of people if they mention a certain word or something. It's incredible.
I think she blocked anybody that said anything negative about her on Twitter, of which I said plenty. So
wow, fair.
So you guys were talking earlier about the idea of like just being a good person. It reminded me of a video I made in college called The Atheist Guide to Getting into Heaven. It was one step. Don't be an asshole.
Regardless of what you believe about whatever mythology gives you solace, all you need to know in the rule book of being a human being is don't be a dick. Treat people the way you want to be treated. You know, I always say it's not building IKEA furniture.
Yeah. Yeah,
you don't end up with an extra shelf and five screws. Directions are one word. It's like Kool-Aid. Add water. It isn't that difficult, and it feels good. Being a good person actually is kind of selfish because there's nothing that will brighten your day more than by knowing you did something that made someone else's day easier.
Hmm. And I wanted to ask because I follow you on Twitter, and you always seem to be, you know,
angry
on the side of good. You know, I loved Love is Love in a world that's just so seeped in bullshit and it's how do you find it? Cause I've been finding it hard, especially the last few years. How do you find it in you to continue to stay so, you know, essentially positive and kind of on that optimistic sort of train of thought to continue to try to do the right thing?
Well, you know, because what's the alternative?
Right.
You know, the alternative is, you know, putting a gun in your mouth, I think, you know. I mean, fair. I mean, and I don't mean that lightly. I mean, the amount of trying to find a psychiatrist after 2016 was like trying to win Powerball, because everybody was going to one, and we're gonna have a lot of trauma. But as awful and miserable as these last 4.5 years have been on every conceivable level,
you
cannot have a renaissance without a dark age. You know, unfortunately, we are creatures that we have to get backed into the corner of the burning building with an axe over our head before we realize, oh, we have a fire extinguisher.
Right.
And I will say this, you know, after the stress of this election, I am hopeful. I think white men are on notice, and I'm thrilled, because the people that saved us in this election, the people that literally saved us, because if he had won, this experiment would have been over. He would have outlawed the press. He would have been emperor. I mean, that's not exaggeration.
Yeah.
But the people who saved us, Stacey Abrams better get nominated and better fucking win the Nobel Peace Prize, because she got screwed out of the governorship, and she got 800,000 people of color and women to vote.
Yeah.
The Navajo Nation in Arizona won us that state.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. The statistic I read was there are 89,000 people of the Navajo Nation in Arizona. 78,000 of them registered to vote. 76,000 of them voted for Joe Biden. And Biden is ahead in Arizona by 15,000 votes. So women of people of color, women, Navajo Nation, the Muslim population of Michigan flipped Michigan. All the people that Trump hates and had no reason to vote for him because they had no reason to think it was going to benefit me or you.
Right.
They saved us. The Navajo Nation and the population of the state of Georgia should be Time Magazine's People of the Year this year, because talk about true Americans.
Right.
How ironic that a group that we committed genocide on ended up saving this country from complete tyranny.
Yeah.
And that's a conversation I hope Biden has. We need the president to release an official statement saying this country was founded on the blood of lots of innocent indigenous peoples that were forcibly brought over here or were summarily exterminated. While we today did not do these things, our families and our past did. Mm-hmm. The American government now officially apologizes to all of these people and hopes that they can find it in their hearts to forgive us. Because remember that thing going around when the voting was happening, and that was an African-American woman. It might have actually been in Atlanta. She said, it's a good thing black people just want equality and don't want revenge.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. Yeah.
That stuck with me so much that I am hopeful, because I hope I live long enough to see the government run nary a white man. I want it all be young people and women and people of color and trans people and gay people and people who are physically challenged, because white guys have had the keys to the car for far too long, and we drove this fucking thing into the ground. Yeah, let's turn the page. And that's what happened in this election. The white people are complaining because they realize that people are empowered. And I do think we're going to get Georgia. And I do think that now, if I ever hear someone else say my vote doesn't matter, I'm going to punch them in the throat and then not be friends with them.
Absolutely.
You're saying that figuratively, right? Figuratively punch them in the throat, not actually.
Figuratively not be friends with them. Physically punch them in the throat. I'm like Kathy Bates in Fried Green Tomatoes when she rams into that car. I got good insurance. I'm old.
All right, Mike, you got another question? Are you good?
That's good. Thank you, guys.
All right, thank you, man. Thanks, Mike. Great to see you.
I hope that speech answered your question. Don't worry.
I'll take it.
Okay. Have a good night, sir.
Mike's awesome, man. He runs the Outlaw Nation Facebook page. Really good soul in the world. Yeah, he's very, very good guy. I always love him. I'm honored to have him being part of everything we do here on the Outlaw Nation. Brian Brawler sent in a super chat. He said, God, I love both you guys. What do you both appreciate about each other? Oh, shit. Mark, what are you currently reading in comics? Any recommendations? Are you looking forward to future states?
Okay. He's a gentle lover. He makes great French press coffee in the morning. No, I like John because we can be honest with each other. And there was never once a moment of any sort of pretense. It was like instantly we could debate. And debate isn't aggression. Disagreement isn't aggression. Yeah. I like debating, and I can always have no matter when I'm around John, I'm always if we have a quiet moment, there's going to be a good hour-long conversation about movies or the world or relationships. So I like that. I admire that a lot about John, and his passion for this crazy game is equally as crazy, but equally as passionate. What am I reading comics-wise? I just read a great graphic novel by Durf Backdurf, the guy that wrote and did My Friend Dahmer. He just did a book about the May 4th shootings at Kent State University, where I went to college.
Oh, shit.
And it's just won a bunch of... It just got nominated for an award at Angoulême, which is a big French comics art festival, and got nominated for Best Original Graphic Novel. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
What like mainstream stuff am I reading now? I'm liking Bendis's Superman stuff a great deal.
Do you like how he's changed? You've worked with him before in the past a few years ago. Do you think his writing, his approach to the characters have changed? Can you say, I know people love Bendis, absolutely. But has he matured even more so as an artist and comic book creator?
I'm loath to say matured.
Okay.
I would say evolved. The guy that was dirt poor like when I was in 1994, eating SpaghettiOs out of a pot while sitting at his drawing table in a studio apartment, is not that guy anymore. He's a man with four children. He's been married for 20 years. He's, you know, creations of his have been nominated, have won Oscars.
Right.
But none of that changed him. The family changed him. He's now so much less interested in the dark and the underbelly and more interested in, and I think you can see that in the work. You know, you don't take Superman when you want to write Batman.
Right. Good point.
And you know, people can argue about whether they like it or not, but it's pure and it's honest and it's where he is right now as a human being. And I'm really enjoying it because I never thought I would see a side that wasn't Mammoth Noir. Yeah. And not in a reductive way, but to see this sort of this positivity and this forward thinking and this devotion to family, and I think is something that comics used to be about. And then Alan Moore showed up and has said he would never do those books now because he doesn't want to be responsible for all the nihilism that happened. So, and this is also a really hard question to answer because I read so much of this stuff for knowledge just to be able to talk about pitches and stuff, that unless something is absolutely brilliant or absolutely awful, it sort of falls into I'm consuming this for knowledge. I'm consuming this for information.
Right.
So I wish I could read for pleasure more than I can. I have a lot over this, obviously, I tend to gravitate more towards the original graphic novels and things that are off the beaten path because Superman doesn't, Batman, the X-Men, they don't need my recommendation. They'll be fine. But if I could draw attention to something that made me go, wow, if I could share that with some other reader and help some other artists get discovered more, that to me is more interesting.
Yeah, yeah. To answer my section of that is to say the thing I enjoy the most about, well, not the most, but the things I enjoy about Mark in a nutshell, I think I would say is what Mark said earlier, the honesty stuff. We fell into fast conversation. Honest conversation, and in a city where you were trained to not speak your truth that often, it was great to be able to let the hair down a little bit as well. I think also I've got a little bitchiness inside me, and I enjoy that Mark and I can let that out with each other, and it's fun to do so when we're talking about something just a little bit. I also enjoy the fact that Mark was a comic book writer that I had read for many years. There were no errors with Mark. There are no errors with Mark. If you're a good person and you're decent to Mark, Mark is absolutely decent and good to you. And he is loyal. And you appreciate that. So those are the things that I immediately gravitated to about
Mark. Make me cry, John. That's very sweet. Thank you. No, that means a lot. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Don't squirt. Don't do that. Don't start crying. Don't get emotional. Don't do that. Don't make me suffer.
Well, squirting and crying are two different emotions. So choose your words wisely.
Yes, sir.
If you cry when you squirt, consult a physician.
That's right. And Draco is hilarious and knowledgeable. Yes, this too. Thanks for being so attuned to what is going on in the world / country and breaking it down so succinctly, says Mukbang Reviews.
Thanks. I try to fake it, so.
All right, let's bring in someone live here. Let's bring in Royko. Royko, what's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, hi, John. Hi, Mark. Hello, my fellow quinquennarians. So together, if
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you know what
I'm 35. About. I'm 35. I don't know what you're talking about. Go 34. Ahead.
No, the way I refer to it, John, is I celebrated the 25th anniversary of my 25th birthday.
Yes. Yes.
Because Americans can't do math anymore. So they're like, oh, that means you're 30?
They just drift off while trying to do the numbers.
So I was going to ask something, but I love the when he called you a gentle lover. It reminded me that I absolutely love some of the innuendo and flirting that you do on the Schmoldown. That was I'm talking to Mark.
Yeah.
No, you don't do that. And I was just wondering, have you ever gotten a blowback from that?
Blowback. Okay.
Oh, wow. Sorry. My God. Okay, now I'm embarrassed.
I was like,
hello.
That's going to be at least $100 in Streamlabs if you want that answer. And a good bottle of wine.
Let's do it. Okay. Send it in, people. Please.
That was embarrassing.
No, not at all. Because for me, it's never – and if I ever crossed a line and made someone uncomfortable, I would absolutely stop doing it. But for me, it's more – it's character stuff. It's affectionate stuff. It's not me saying, oh, nice tits. It's, you know, me talking, you know, saying, you know, it must be hard being Bateman and being pretty. That's a lot different. It comes from a kernel of truth, but it comes from a place of comedy and affection, not from a place of sexual aggression or seriousness. Now, when Henry Cavill starts playing, then restraining orders will be issued. But until then, it's basically just my shtick.
Okay. And then since you guys brought it up, so Royko, I know I'm going to bring in politics a bit, so I apologize. Up here in Canada, so it's not, I guess it's not as bad up here in Canada, but I know a lot of my LGBTQ friends and mm-hmm. people I know are conservative, which blows my mind. So I'm wondering how many in the States are conservative? How many people do you know that are conservative? How do you deal with that? Especially today.
Hmm. I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm assuming these conservative LGBT people are probably people that are financially pretty well off.
Usually older white guys, yeah. Mm. Older white guys, yeah. They're...
Ding, ding, ding. That answers your question right there.
Yeah.
There's a thing that I believe that in the socioeconomic caste system we have here in America, that when you're a certain level of financial success, that becomes the minority that you are. Mm. It's when you see people like Tim Cook, gay white man, head of Apple. I don't know if he's ever done anything for LGBT causes. I know he's all his money's probably hidden over off. I know he probably doesn't pay taxes just because rich people don't pay taxes here. Right. So when you're on that level, when you're a billionaire, first of all, when I'm emperor of the world, billionaires won't exist. No one needs that much money. You just don't. And if you have $1 billion and you burn through it, you definitely didn't deserve to have it in the first
place.
Fair point.
Yeah.
You know, because I will circle back to Miss J.K. Rowling before this transphobic stuff. The moment she became a billionaire, she gave half of it away to charity, which is once again why she's so maddening to me. But I by no means consider myself an exemplary human being. But if I had $1 billion, I would be giving so much of it away because helping other people is the best drug in the world. Hmm. Knowing you can positively change someone's trajectory for the better, there is nothing more powerful and more of a privilege to be able to do that. Hmm. And I don't understand gay conservatives. I just don't. Because it's like when you see like a black conservative or a Jewish conservative.
Or a Latino.
Or a Latino conservative. Yeah. I'm talking, when I say conservative, I mean what it means now, not what it really means.
Right.
I see these people and I'm like, you know what they call you when you're not in the room with the rest of them, don't you? Because you're the one. You're one of the good ones to them. Best case scenario. And I just don't understand that. You know, there's a great line in one of my favorite underrated comedies of all time called Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
Oh, yeah, I love that movie.
And Patrick Swayze gets a pep talk, and he says, your approval is neither required nor desired. And it's absolutely true. You don't have to like me. I don't have to like you. That's fine. But I'm going to live my life freely, and you live your life freely. The difference between the left and the right is I get mad because I want everyone to be treated fairly.
Yeah.
The right gets mad because they don't want anybody to be treated fairly.
Right.
Except for them.
Well, of course, because for most white people in America, there's an asterisk next to all the rules, and it means except you because you're special.
There you go.
And to use another one of my cliche phrases, in the movie of life, most of us are unpaid silent background.
True.
Wow.
Strong. Well, so and calm Roca, down.
Make way. I think I'm going to put a new person on Rushmore.
Go ahead. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
That's a good answer there.
Yeah.
Okay. Where in Canada are you at?
Toronto. Downtown
Toronto. I love Toronto.
When's the last time you were here?
Last century.
Oh Jesus! you gotta come after the lockdown. Come down here. It's awesome.
Oh yeah, I want to. I was supposed to do Fan Expo.
Oh,
the comic show there, and I do want to go for the film festival because the Toronto Film Festival is one of the few remaining.
Oh, TIFF is still phenomenal. Yeah,
still that is both prestigious and populist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the food in Toronto, I remember as a kid, the food being so good.
The one thing that we lacked 20 years ago in Toronto was good Mexican food. And that now has changed. So that's it. Toronto is the best damn place in the world because now you can even get good Mexican food. It's over. It's done.
I live in California. When I travel, that's the last kind of food I get because we have the best Mexican food outside of Mexico in California. True.
Yeah, I used to live in San Mateo, so trust me, I ate a lot of Mexican food. Anyway, thank you guys, and looking forward to more matches.
Yeah. Awesome, thanks, man. Yeah. Have a good night, brother.
See ya.
All right, let's bring in Brennan, who's been waiting as well. Brennan, what's going on, dude? Yep. Mark Andrego, Brennan.
Hey, Mark. A big amen to what you said about the Navajo.
Yeah, absolutely.
This will be the second time they saved our country.
Yeah.
Yeah, amen to that.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I'd like to ask, what are your favorite political thrillers?
Ooh. I love No Way Out. I just watched it recently. And everybody in that, I don't know how Will Patton did not get an Oscar nomination for that movie. Will Patton is so good in that movie.
The finale.
It is insane. Sean Young is great. Iman is great. I love JFK. I don't necessarily believe what Oliver Stone does, that everyone except me was in on it.
Yeah.
But it's a masterful film, and just the mixed media he used. The Parallax View is a fantastic film.
The Warren Beatty one.
The Warren Beatty one.
Wow.
And the Criterion Collection just announced for January that they're putting out a restored version of it with all sorts of extras. That's a great one. The original Manchurian Candidate. I mean, all the usual suspects. Seconds with Rock Hudson is an amazing movie.
Yeah.
A movie that was like, oh, well, he actually could act. Gosh, I'm trying to think of the recent ones. I really liked Ides of March.
I was just going to say, did you like Ides of March?
I really thought that felt like a movie that was made in like 1978 in the best possible way.
Yeah. I agree. What about Winter Soldier? Any thoughts on that? That felt like a political thriller. No?
It felt like a political thriller for a superhero movie.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
I don't mean that backhandedly, but when everyone was like, it's like the Parallax View, I'm like, no, it's a movie. But it's not exactly a deeply complex, layered movie. It's a great movie, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Right.
But there's not a lot of mystery in it.
Yeah.
But if it makes people, if people watch that movie, heard it referred to, recommended like Parallax View, and watched it, great. If it's a gateway to other genres, fantastic.
Right. Like 3 Days of the Condor. Yeah, stuff like that.
The Conversation.
I just watched that for the first time. Yeah.
Right.
Unofficially. Network is a great political thriller.
Network is fantastic.
Topical as hell. Yeah. Topical as hell now. When it was prescient back then, it's topical as hell now.
And this movie is political, not in the sense of politics political, okay. but political and societal.
Yeah.
Robert De Niro in The King of Comedy is a movie that is more honest today than it was when it came out.
Absolutely.
And that's why when people were giving Joaquin Phoenix's Joker all sorts of guff, I'm like, they're like, it's just Taxi Driver meets The King of Comedy. I'm like, okay, but now people are going to go watch both of those movies.
Yes. So.
Good point.
Yeah, I know for me, The Hunt for Red October is my favorite
thriller. Oh, that's a great one too. That's a great one. Yeah. You know what else is great? Das Boot.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
If you want to watch a submarine movie that makes you really crawl out of your own skin, that is a great movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Agreed.
Oh, right. and one last one. Since Wolfgang Peterson directed Das Boot, In the Line of Fire.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh.
Right. One of the few movies about that crazy old man that I can still watch and enjoy.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's cool, what I got. That's all
awesome.
I got.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks, man. Good to see you. Stay safe.
See you. Bye.
Bye. Brennan, so awesome. Love that guy. Lewis Cox says, Mark, how would you do a Superman movie or TV series or comic book run? Yeah, I mean, you did Supergirl, so would Superman be something you want to tackle?
I would love to write Superman. I would love to, because the few instances I got to write him in Supergirl when he appeared were great. Mm-hmm. And being a native Clevelander, and he was created in Cleveland, the symmetry there is nice. If I had to, what would I do? I would do a Superman movie. All I need is Henry Cavill. So I have become that creepy old gay dude.
He's a gentle lover, I've heard, for sure.
I just want to look at him. I'm so old now that it's like, you know, make me some popcorn and do my laundry. That's even better.
Just stand there doing the laundry. All right. Cinema Gorilla sent in a stream live here. He said, Kings, Dr. Dre, I was an intern at WB/Snyderverse, and all I wanted was to keep helping DC. Yet as an immigrant student, they could never hire me unless I had agents who sponsored a visa. Any tips on finding/working with reps/agents overall as a writer? Yeah, Mark, any tips to give people?
This business is maddening because unlike if you're studying mortuary science or cosmetology or being a chef, things go A to B to C to D. In this business, things go from A to that upside down Russian R, back to lowercase a, over to Z, and there's no one way to do anything. I got my first agent because he recognized me at an airport in Dallas from a comic book signing.
Wow.
And it's just about the reason there are so many middle-aged dudes that are successful in Hollywood is you got to be here and you got to put in the miles. You got to be too dumb to quit.
Yeah.
And endurance trumps talent any day of the week. You got to be prompt, personable, and professional. I hate things like that. It's very like, you know, company meeting, but it's true. If you're pleasant and do your job without complaint and, you know, and have a slight aptitude for what you do, it's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
As far as a foreign person getting a green card or a visa here, well, your odds of that just went up substantially after the election.
Yeah.
And I don't know if agents or managers could help with that. But if you did have a job and someone wanted you there, they could write a letter for that. Like if you were working for a studio executive and he said, this person is important to my business, that those help. But I would consult an immigration lawyer and not trust this dumbass who's talking right now. But don't give up. If it's, you know, I was always lucky. My parents said from an early age to me, do what you love because you're going to be doing it long after we're dead and buried. So if it's something you love, it's something that is attainable. It might not be attainable quick, but if it's something you love doing, stay with it. And that, whether that's painting houses, fixing cars, or writing movies, whatever, follow your passion. Not enough of us are passionate in life.
Yeah,
and life is way too short to not be passionate.
Yeah, that's cool. Very well said, Mark. Absolutely. Let's see. Let's bring in Darren Wright here. Darren, what's up, dude? Coming from the UK. Darren, Mark. Mark, Darren.
Morning.
Hello. Morning, Mark. Where are you in the UK?
I'm in a little town called Burton, which is near Birmingham in the center of the country.
Nice
and early as always.
What's your question, brother?
So my question is, what actor or actress do you think has the best catalog of movies in their career?
Ooh. Oh, that is a good question.
You said AMA. Let's do this.
There's a couple. I think, barring a couple of dogs, Emma Thompson has a great body of work.
Mm.
Helen Mirren has an insane body of work and an insane body. Who else? Nicholson's got a pretty consistent body of work.
Yeah.
For those guys, he doesn't have many. He's got a couple stinkers, but most of the ones aren't his fault. And then the classic people, you know, like Betty Davis, Katherine Hepburn, Cary Grant. There's so many, you know, Orson Welles, you know, even things that don't necessarily work entirely are always fascinating. Contemporary actors, I would say Kate Winslet has an amazing body of work.
Daniel Day-Lewis?
He's too fussy.
I've done a lot of films like Tom Cruise, for example, to say that you've had a great catalog of work.
Yeah, okay. I mean, for me, it's like the difference between Prince and Michael Jackson. After Michael Jackson made Thriller, it was years, and he put three albums out. After Purple Rain, Prince put out an album a year.
Yeah.
The level of consistency, anybody can spend 10 years on a monologue and convince you they're Oscar worthy. But to be able to continually generate work, because even on Prince's weakest albums, there were always one or two great singles.
Fair point.
So it's easy to be Emily Dickinson and hide this shit in your underwear drawer. It's hard to be prolific. It's hard to do that because it's like giving birth and raising a child every time you write or create something. That's not an exaggeration, you know. And if it doesn't feel like you're giving birth to a child, it's probably not worth doing unless you're getting a huge paycheck, because there's got to be some, when you're an artist, there's got to be a little bit of fear. The moment something is offered to me and I'm like, oh, I could do that, I'll be like, no.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to phone it in. I'm trying to think of male act of men who have contemporary men who have strong bodies of work.
My example was Bill Murray, because no matter what I've seen him in, I think his performances have always been fantastic. And
that's what made me absolutely. Yeah, he's great at everything. And you've obviously seen Tootsie, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The last thing I saw him in was The Dead Don't Die, which I think was absolutely fantastic.
I think I had that here.
Yeah. So that's. I hope that kind of answers the question.
I mean, that's an answer. Dustin Hoffman. Dustin Hoffman has a great catalog of work, wouldn't you say?
Mr. Magorium's Magic Emporium.
Yeah.
To like James Jean, who did two or three films.
Three films, and
compare it to the exact same.
Yeah. But I mean, it's tough to do three great films and then peace out off the planet. Like, that is incredible.
And the other example is the late, great John Cazale.
Right. Right.
Who never made a bad movie. Every film he was in was nominated for Best Picture.
It's incredible.
Yeah. He was Meryl Streep's significant other before he died.
Yes, he was. Yeah, yeah. There's a great documentary about it that HBO did.
It was great.
Two years ago, where Meryl talks about it. First time that I'd seen Meryl talk about John Cazale. So, yeah.
And if you haven't seen Dog Day Afternoon, go watch it. I guarantee you are in for a treat. A movie that is fresher to, I can't believe that movie was made 40 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
45, 46 years ago.
Yeah. It is,
it is an amazing.
Wasn't that one of your Criterion films, John?
It is not a Criterion film yet, unfortunately.
Someone was showing the DVD of it the other day and I can't remember it was now.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Dog Day. Dog Day hasn't gone over yet to Criterion. I hope one day it does, but yeah.
Warner does some decent special editions, so I think there's a special edition of that on Blu-ray.
I keep waiting for a Deer Hunter Criterion collection.
A Deer Hunter, a special edition is coming out or just came out on Blu-ray.
Okay.
Recently, yeah.
All right. Cool. Anything else there, Darren? Are you good?
No, all good. I'm going to get back to watching your show and then back to watching movies.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Great to see you.
Stay safe, my friend.
See you again.
Much love. All right, let's move on to this. Remember, keep sending in your Streamlabs and Super Chats. We've got about 30 minutes left in the show, a little bit over 30 minutes left in the show. So if you want to ask Mark anything at AMA, send in your Streamlabs and Super Chats. We'll get them answered here on the show. And if you want to come in live, the link should be in the chat by now. Sean Barrett, I'll put the link in there. Mukbang Review says, Mark, you are clearly well-read. But do you recall or can you relate any teachers that encourage your reading and writing? Mine was Ms. Gunn, R.I.P. Yeah. Did you have any teachers that kind of influenced your life, Mark?
Absolutely. In elementary school, Mrs. Bassett, she was my sixth and seventh grade teacher at St. Mary's of the Assumption School in Mentor, Ohio. And I had always had a higher reading level than most kids might because of comic books, because I knew words like Ragnarok and Apocalypse when I was like four. And she let me borrow. She said I had to get permission from my mom, but she knew I liked Stephen King, and she let me borrow her book club edition of Christine in sixth grade.
Ooh, damn. Sixth grade? Damn.
Yeah. Ooh. Oh, here's a quick story about how awesome my mom is and how I don't deserve this mom. So in 81, The Shining, the movie was coming out.
Yes.
And I wanted to go see it. My mom was like, it's rated R. I'm like, well, can I read the book? She's like, sure. If you read the book, I'll buy you the book. So I read the book and I did it for a book report at Catholic school. Wow. So my mom gets called in for a parent teacher conference, sits down with this nun, and the nun says, do you know what your son did his book report on? She's like, yes, I bought it for him. And then the nun said, you think that's appropriate? My mom said, I don't know. Was the book report well written? And the nun said, well, yes. And she said, okay, then we're done here.
Oh, damn.
So that's 55% responsible for all of what you see today.
Yes, and I love it.
And the other teacher was in college. At Kent State University, I went to college. I majored in theater, and we were required to take 3 semesters of theater history. And the professor was legendary, and everyone was terrified of her. Her name is Dr. Rose Bank. And during those classes, you would read anywhere from 4 to 8 plays a week.
Wow.
And I literally know something about the world and world history. Every day there's something I know that I learned because of that class.
Right.
She was the kind of teacher that if you were a C+ student at your optimal level and you worked your butt off, she had more respect for you than if you were just an easy student with a photographic memory who got easy A's. Wow. She held herself to the same standard she held her students to, which is something that is unfortunately rare in teachers. And it got to the point where you didn't want to disappoint her. Mm-hmm. And getting good notes from her. She was my advisor on my senior thesis play that I directed. Mm-hmm. And the most... one of the things that I will want in my obituary was she's one of the top 5 theater historians in the world. Mm-hmm. And she did a book about antebellum theater, pre-Civil War South theater.
Oh, okay.
And in the introduction, and I didn't know this until after the book was published, I was one of 2 students that she thanked in her introduction.
Wow.
And I literally, when I read it, I was just bawling because that is like God saying, here's the keys of the car.
Right. Wow.
So yeah, it's why I want after this, I want Biden to sign an executive order getting rid of all teachers, doctors, and nurses, college debt.
Just
tell them they're free and clear because teachers should make the money athletes and actors and writers, big time novelists make. Mm-hmm. Because being a teacher, man, I don't know how people do it. Yep. I don't know how people do it.
Yeah,
and I agree with you. The second most important person in a kid's life after their parents.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially during time of COVID, and then all these nuts trying to make them train themselves or trying to make these teachers train in defending the kids from school shootings instead of taking the guns out of people's
hands. It's like in colleges where they have courses for girls to not get raped. How about we teach boys don't rape?
Yeah, don't rape. You know? Yeah.
Instead of teaching kids how not to get shot, how about we have gun laws?
Yeah, yeah. Craziness.
Don't come at John for that. Come at me.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Smithy. Director Alan Smithy's in here. How are you, Alan?
You trying to come after my guns, Mark Andrico? What's going on here? Be it. No, I'm just kidding. How's it going, Roca and Mark Andrico? Nice to meet you.
Good to see you.
All right. Hey, I was just going to say to the nuns who are watching, The Shining encourages you to believe in the afterlife.
True.
It discourages drinking, and it tells you about the horrors of domestic abuse. So that nun clearly wanted you to be a drunken jerk, basically.
And that the devil is real.
If you do the priest at my school, that was on brand. So,
Do you like the Shining movie? Because obviously Stephen King hates the movie, but loves his.
No, book. that's not true anymore. Ooh. Well, after Stephen King saw Dr. Sleep, he said, "I now enjoy the Stanley Kubrick Shining. I now like that movie." So
really, okay,
yes, mm-hmm. yes. And if you haven't seen Dr. Sleep, Warner Brothers so shit the bed on promoting that movie. Rebecca Ferguson should have been nominated for an Oscar for that movie.
Wow.
That movie is fantastic. The problem with that movie is it's paced like a Kubrick film, and Americans today don't understand anything that isn't multiple billion cuts blowing up in your face. I will die on the hill that movie, I think, is, and I love it, Chapter One. I think Dr. Sleep improves on the book in immeasurable ways and is a better movie than It Part One.
I think Mike Flanagan's movies are very influenced by Kubrick, and he isn't about over editing and shooting all these quick shots. So I really like his movies.
Yeah.
All right. What do you think, Andrejko, is the scariest horror movie to you? What's a horror movie that for you is, it's not that it's entertaining or you love it, but it's really scary?
A movie that I sort of love hate that I watch and it terrifies me, and I'm like, why do I do this? Why have I watched this many times? The original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh my God.
Is a thoroughly disturbing exercise in just terror. There's next to no blood in that movie. It's all in our heads. It's one of those movies from that whole era that, because those directors weren't trained in camera technique and didn't have big budgets, everything felt like you were right there, whether it's Night of the Living Dead or Texas Chainsaw Massacre or even the original Halloween. You're just like, there's something about just a visceral. And the last shot of that movie, somebody did a drawing of that, and it was a woman in the back of a truck driving away from the CNN building, and it said Biden declared winner. And it was like, oh, we're getting out finally. Oh, yay. I don't know how to react. That movie's terrifying. Another one that I think is really, really, for lack of a better word and a bad pun, haunting is The Exorcist.
Mm. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because again, it feels real. There's a great, somebody wrote about it, and it's floating on the internet, that you could watch The Exorcist as a movie about a girl who's suffering from schizophrenia. It can be viewed as a movie about severe, profound mental illness. And it's just an amazing film. And both of those films are utterly disturbing and really stay with me, but in a way that doesn't, it's not like watching, say, Hostel or...
Right.
You know, skinning someone alive is not scary, it's just sadism. That's like saying, it's like comparing a spicy gourmet Indian meal that gives you heartburn to sliders from White Castle.
You got your White Castle sliders there.
You get a physical reaction from both, but one is because it's so exotic and good, and the other is just because it's destroying you.
I remember when I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre, half of my horror was like, they need to clean this fucking house. This is like the filthiest house. There are basically chicken feathers like everywhere in this fucking house.
Yeah. Dirty fingernails scare me more than most horror movies. So that was
right. What's been going on there? Have you been scraping something? I want to get disease or anything. All right.
That's fucking brilliant. All right.
Well, hey, Andrejko, I just wanted to say thank you, by the way, for making Jeff Snyder a palpable Schmodown player, because like, I don't think anyone else in the Schmodown could be coupled with Snyder and bring out the best in him like you. So,
he brings out some good stuff in me too. So it's not a completely one-sided relationship. Sure. Roxy is the glue, man. Roxy,
right.
I say this every chance I get. The reason we are a good team is because Roxy is a great manager.
Right.
She was like, even if you know the answer, talk to each other. You're going to see in the recent matches we played that listening has really saved our bacon a lot.
There you go.
And I do love Snyder. I know he secretly watches every episode of the Outlaw Nation.
He does secretly.
I love
he's got guys. A he's got a chip in his head that when his name is said out loud, it sends an alert to him. So hey Jeff, I hope Boston is good right now.
So go to bed. Oh, man.
That's right. All right.
Thanks, Smithy.
Great to meet you, and Draco, and good to see you, Roka. We're going to keep brother. Sunglasses in the Schmodown forever.
No!
Awesome.
God damn it. See you, man. Yeah, I was pitching the idea. I want to get rid of sunglasses in virtual matches. I'm done with it. Everyone is so worried that players are cheating. It's crazy to me. And I'm like, well, then let's just go all the way. No sunglasses, yeah. Nothing. No, nothing. Just look straight at the camera like this the whole fucking time.
The only reason I wear sunglasses in the live matches is because all those lights, and I had LASIK right. done years ago, so the light actually hits the seams, and it's like it's not an affectation. It's like it's either that or I'm this the whole time. I'm like Mr. Right. Magoo. So, but the idea that people are cheating as we play digitally is so crazy to me. If someone has figured out the time and the ability to be able to do that, I want to talk to them because I can barely. It feels even faster than when we're in the studio.
It does, doesn't it? Good God,
it's insane.
He's counting five four before I'm like processing shit. I'm like, how the fuck is this happening so fast? So yeah, I agree with you, man. This idea and all like all this idea of showing hands, it drives me insane.
And you know what? We don't need to cheat. We're good at this.
Yeah. Like we've proven that we're good at this. You know, all of a sudden we're gonna cheat.
I think unless it's something like, you know, who was Eisenstein's script coordinator, we deserve the benefit of the doubt for knowing stuff
and being able to have
deductive reasoning. And if I'm gonna cheat, it's gonna be on something like where I hide my first million, not about, you know, how many what where the colon was in the Mission Impossible sequel, you know.
Right.
the two dots, not an actual colon.
Right. Good call. Mark, I'm a Prince fan, so thanks for mentioning it. Screw. Do you have a favorite Prince song/album? Mine is Sign of the Times, but I love all his work. Yeah, you mentioned Prince. Do you have a favorite?
That's hard, man, because so much amazing work. I think Purple Rain is probably the best soundtrack album ever recorded.
Mm, yeah,
Purple Rain. Because it's basically also a concept album for a musical. The whole story of the movie is there. You know, every single one of his albums has a great song in it. I'm partial to, I love You Got the Look, the Sheena Easton duet.
Right.
I love that a man that was that devoutly religious was also that openly sexual. It's just such an interesting dichotomy. I think his Batman concept album is fantastic and underrated.
Dude, that is a great fucking album.
Party Man, the Future, Scandalous, they're all Bat Dance is a blast of a song.
If we
ever get to have Halloween again, I want to go as him from the video with half Batman, half Joker. Yeah. But just so much great work. I mean, and also his songwriting, Nothing Compares to You. I mean, that song.
He just released, or his estate just released this double album or double CD called Originals. And it's songs that he gave to other people that he had recorded. And his version of Nothing Compares to You is even better or on par, if not better, than Sinead O'Connor's version. And it's incredible.
I would say it's equal. I would say the Sinead O'Connor version is so Wuthering Heights. It's so
haunting. Yeah.
Haunting. Yeah. The Prince version is like, I'm going to take you to church.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
Literally. Yeah. I mean, it feels like, I feel like I'm in a Baptist tent revival with that. Yeah. All that, you know, I'm fanning myself. I got my tambourine. It's just so, it's just so soulful and an entirely different, whereas Nothing Compares to You is sort of like, I need to try to get better.
Yeah.
The Sinead O'Connor version.
Right.
His is, man, you were the best. It's a bummer we're not together. It's less somber in a way and more accepting of a breakup, but acknowledging, it's going to be, nothing compares to you.
Yeah.
You know, they're both amazing.
His cover of Gigolos Get Lonely too, which is the one the Time did. Woo, that's a goddamn great cover. As far as your answer, I think it depends on the day for me. If I can answer this question, it depends on the day. Favorite album is probably always going to be Purple Rain, but I'll defend Around the World. Was it Around the World?
Around the World in the Day. Controversy.
Parade is great. Yeah.
Under the Cherry Moon had great music.
Under the Cherry Moon. Hell yes, it did.
You know?
His Christopher Tracy's the last song on that that compares to Purple Rain, the last song on that soundtrack from Under the Cherry Moon is incredible. Sometimes It Snows in April. That's an incredible song. So yeah, there's so much that Prince talks about.
That movie was Kristen Scott Thomas's first movie.
Yes, that's when I first fell in love with her, which is why I will always defend The English Patient. I don't care what anybody says. Let's see.
The English Patient is a period version of Friends without a laugh track. It's about awful white people.
You're terrible. It's unrequited tragic love, man, in the desert. Come on.
Assholes in the desert is what it should be called.
All right, let's bring in another person. Daniel Haygood, what's up, man? How are you?
Hey, good evening, fellas.
Hello, sir.
Nice to meet you, Mark.
You as well.
So I was the one who wrote that very clever super chat about you guys being the wisest and also the oldest. So that's me.
Thank you for your question. Next.
I wanted to ask about a little bit about the Conjuring verse. What do you think about it? I thought that the Conjuring was very important for the direction of like horror movies. I think being like 24, of course, I don't know shit about anything before that era. But it was the first movie I went and watched to see if I could watch a horror movie alone in a theater, and I was too scared to get up and leave. I thought if I turned around, something would jump out at me on the screen or something. I was literally too scared to move.
Then definitely don't watch The Exorcist by yourself.
Yeah.
I'm of two minds about the Conjuring universe. I think it's great that it has shifted away from the torture porn and into the haunted house thing. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy The Nun a great deal. I think The Nun is a really fun. That really feels like an 80s horror film in the best sense, where it's scary, but almost like there's almost like a John Waters level of glee there. It's just there's a level of sitting around the campfire hearing a scary story. I just saw the original Conjuring for the first time a couple of weeks ago. And this is going to be controversial, but I did not like it.
Yeah.
I think it's beautifully made. I think it's beautifully produced. For me, ghosts aren't real. So okay. the moment I saw them at a university being paid to lecture, I'm like, if I was a student at that university and I was paying tuition and they had these two snake oil assholes come in and speak, I would immediately demand my tuition back, and I would want this place stripped of its accreditation.
You didn't go to a liberal arts college?
I did go to a liberal arts college, not that liberal. And for me, and once again, this is a personal thing. The movie is not a bad movie or a badly made movie, but for me, every time they were talking about their, it felt like Ghostbusters, the Russian drama. And they did no service to Vera Farmiga by dressing her like she was his Patrick Wilson's great 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 grandmother who had been dead for 300 years. And wow. Patrick Wilson's makeup artist hated him because those sideburns and that hair. And good for the two words, vocal coach. His accent went from Bronx to Howard's End.
Yeah.
But it was super successful. It's reinvigorated horror. Just because I don't like something does not mean it's bad, or doesn't mean I wish it ill.
I don't know. I think it's bad, Mark. Now I think it's a terrible movie. Thanks.
I'll describe it this way. I went into it like a girl on prom night. I had mints. I had a hairbrush. I had my IUD in. I was ready to go. But it just didn't do it for me. And that's more my baggage than anything wrong with the movie, as I think I just explained in way too much detail. But but I did like the Nun movies, and I think the Annabelle movies are terrifying, because who would ever buy that doll for their child to begin with?
That's true. That's a fair point. Cool. All right, Daniel, anything else?
No, that's all. Thanks for ruining me, Mark.
Go watch the original The Haunting if you want to see a great haunted house movie.
Agreed. That's not the Liam Neeson one.
No, that's the remake. Okay. No, that's the remake.
That was
another great one is also called The Innocents.
Oh, shit.
And it's fantastic.
I haven't done The Innocents in a long time.
Innocence with innocent plural, not innocence like Age of Innocence.
I see. Gotcha. Thank you for the recommendation, sir. Sure.
Awesome. All right, thank you, Daniel. Peace, brother. All right, let's run through some Streamlabs. Mark, we're running out of time here. We're going to get through a few of these. Cinema Gorilla says, any tips or lessons on pitching titles, characters, or storylines? Feel free to just do one if you want, one tip or anything.
For comic books, as far as comic book writing, it's even weirder than getting into screenwriting. Mm-hmm. Artists can show art. It's very hard to get an editor to read a script. Your best bet is to go through something like DeviantArt or a local university that has an art program and create some original material, even if it's an 8-page story, but make a complete thing. It's like the equivalent of a demo reel. Have a story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, has some people talking, has some action, has some quiet moments that shows that, because it's really, really hard as a writer. And it, you know, and it's, once again, getting to know people and doing it. You know, it's I wish there was an easy answer, but there really isn't. It's just a lot of serendipity and a lot of hard work.
Yeah, there you go. Andrew H. Says, Mark, you've been great today. Thanks for the show. This is from Kenny White in the live chat. Would you ever come on to the Cinephiles? You'd be great as a guest. I would love for you to choose Tootsie. Yeah, Cinephiles being my other podcast where we break down scene by scene, the entire movie. Yeah, would you ever want to be a guest on the Cinephiles, Mark?
I would love to, but I would actually ask to do a movie other than Tootsie, because I did Tootsie on Clark Wolf's AFI Top 100.
Right on.
And I think said pretty much all there is, all I had to say about that movie. But there are definitely, I would love to do King of Comedy.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. All right.
I would also love to do a movie that is one of the most underappreciated films in Francis Ford Coppola's career, Peggy Sue Got Married. I would love to introduce that to a generation of people, because that's a movie that is one of my top three favorite Coppola films.
Let me see if I've got this right. You bought an Edsel? I think that's the line.
Yeah, and it's and there's just so much beauty in that movie. And Nicolas Cage's performance got a lot of guff, but he's playing a 17-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he really is. It's sort of like when you watch his performance, it's sort of like that scene in The Birdcage where Robin Williams says, "Walk like John Wayne," and then Nathan Lane walks like it, and he goes, "What, did I do it wrong?" He's like, "No, I just never realized John Wayne walks like that." It's the same thing. You watch Nicolas Cage's performance and you're like, "Oh, pull back a little. We have a camera and a microphone." But he's playing a 17-year-old kid in the 50s, and it's an amazing performance.
Yeah.
And Kathleen Turner was nominated for an Oscar for it. It's got Jim Carrey in it. It's got Catherine Hicks. It's got Joan Allen. It's an amazing cast, and it's a beautiful movie that got overshadowed because it came out right after Back to the Future.
Right.
And but I would love to do that. There's a handful of movies that I think people Dead Again, the Kenneth Branagh movie that no one ever talks about anymore. Dead Again.
Are you kidding? Is a
film that I would. That's on my short list for Criterion. Yeah. That movie is a brilliant film.
Hell yeah!
As always, all my answers are long winded, but the answer is yes.
I love it. That's why you're on here. JJ _ Woodward said, "Hey guys, I put together a list of holiday movies to force myself into the holiday spirit. Could I get one suggestion from each of you? Love you, Mark. Thanks for being here." Yeah, Mark, a holiday movie. Do you have one that you would suggest?
I have two.
Okay, go ahead.
And I have a cartoon, because you need something. The two movies are, one is It's a Wonderful Life, because even though that movie has been cliched to death, it is still a beautiful movie, and it's not schmaltzy at all. It's actually a pretty
dark film.
After once again, not to beat a dead horse, after the last 4 years that we've gone through, and especially these last 10 months, it's a movie that I think will have great catharsis and resonance for everyone watching it. And it's an amazing, beautiful, funny, just an amazing film all the way around. Yeah. The other one would be Batman Returns.
Nice.
Because once again, along those same lines, we've just had the Penguin for 4.5 years.
Yeah.
And Michelle Pfeiffer would have won an Oscar if genre films were respected back then, because it's an amazing performance.
She was great.
It's my favorite Batman film. The only way to make it better would be to put Heath Ledger in it. But and it's a holiday film, and because they filmed everything in a soundstage, it feels like one of those 50s films where everything is artifice, and thus that becomes the reality. Right. Before either one of those, you must watch Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol, the single best adaptation of the Dickens story and my single favorite Christmas piece of entertainment of all time.
All right. There you go. I'll do two as well. Scrooged and Elf. Scrooged because maybe that's the most authentic Bill Murray performance you're ever going to see, especially that end monologue. Maybe the most real you'll ever see.
That part when he does the thing with the hands.
Yes. And then Elf. I mean, how can you not throw Elf in the mix? You got to have Elf in there for sure. And I think While You Were Sleeping still qualifies as a Christmas movie. So do that one as well. All right. Let's see, keep going here quick.
One more. And this is a Christmas movie. Die Hard.
Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Absolutely. Absolutely. Cinema Gorilla says, hashtag release the 11-minute rated G cut of The Shining that Kubrick made for the kid, Danny Lloyd. I have no idea what that means. Do you know what that's all about?
If that's true, yes, now.
Yes, I don't know anything about that, so maybe. Canada Rock says, great to meet you, Mark. Rocha, you should have Mark as a guest on Impolite Truths. I would love to hear more of Mark's political views. Yeah,
How many shows do you have? Are you Chandra Rhimes?
I wish. Fuck, I wish I had her bank account. That would be nice. But yeah, if you want to come on the political show with me and Dorina Arellano, absolutely, Andreyko. We will have you on because you are
I don't really have many political opinions.
Shit. All right, Spinning Art says, I thought you guys were exaggerating about Gina Carano, but I took a glimpse at her Twitter. Holy crap.
She's an asshole. Yeah, she's an asshole. You can quote me on that. Make a gif out of it. Gina Carano is an asshole.
She associates AOC with the Nazis, is backing Trump's crap about the election inconsistencies, and is a hardcore anti-masker. And all this is just the last 2 days. Yeah. Yep. She's getting money from this shit for sure. She wouldn't be doing this because she actually believes this crap. You know,
she's 6 months away from a Parler OnlyFans account. So,
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, probably true. She already went nude on Instagram and they took down. Remember,
I'm not body shaming or sex working, but I'm saying she's not going to have a career in film and television because she's talking herself. Any single producer who looks up her, who Googles her today, the first thing that comes up is going to be transphobic, Twitter, Trump.
Yep.
That's a good barometer for anyone's career. Put your name in Google and see what the top five stories are about you. If they're about being prejudiced, about being racist, about being sexist, you might want to rethink who you are.
Yeah. Great point. Canada Rocks also said, speaking of Haunting and the Innocents, did either of you watch The Haunting of Hill House or The Haunting of Bly Manor on Netflix? Mike Flanagan's interpretations of both stories, highly recommended. Any horror series that you like?
I did watch Hill House. I have not watched Bly Manor yet. I'm actually, once again, because I didn't like to watch dark stuff during the Dark Ages, but now I can watch horror films again and not feel like I'm looking out my window. I'm going to try and do Bly Manor over the Thanksgiving break. But I thought his Gerald's Game was insane because Gerald's Game is not a good book.
Right.
And his Gerald's Game is transcendent. His Gerald's Game is so good. I want to take his script and do it as a two-person play.
There you go.
You'll never not remember what the word deglove means after you see that movie.
Oh my. Muckraker says, the 1978 Body Snatchers is creeping its way up toward my number one horror film. I can't ever shake it. What do you make of it, Mark?
I love it. I think it's one of Philip Kaufman's best movies. I think I just rewatched it because they just put out an 80s sort of that's entertainment of horror films called Terror in the Isles.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And there were clips from that in there. And I at least once a month, ever since I saw that movie 42 years ago, will point at someone and go, so that movie is so in my lexicon, and it's great. And it's Brooke Adams. It's Dennis, Donald Sutherland, Leonard Nimoy. It's an amazing cast. And it's shot in a city that isn't New York or Los Angeles. San Francisco is such a character in it. I think it's the best version of that story.
That
has been filmed.
There you go. I agree with that. That's for sure. Maxwell Haddad saying, love you, Andreyko. There you go.
Hey, Maxwell, love you too, man.
Getting some love from Maxwell there. Let's see.
Hats off to Maxwell and everybody who helped organize the Smets Smash Cancer-a-thon this past Saturday and Sunday.
Absolutely. Everybody those did a guys, fantastic job.
Those guys and girls did so much heavy lifting and with immense grace and joy and always a smile on their face that it's a testament to what a good guy Kevin is that he is surrounded by such amazing, generous people.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good point, my man. Andrew Hale said, Mark, did you like Hereditary? Messed me up for days.
I did not.
There you go.
I don't know if we have enough time to go into it. I think that beheading scene makes you think the movie's much edgier than it is. And I think it feels like Rosemary's Baby. But I think Toni Collette is fantastic in it. Yeah. I just felt like it was a nothing burger of a film. I wish the movie was as good as she was. But once again, that's my opinion.
Right.
I know people love it. It's not a badly made movie. I just thought it was a bit up its own ass.
There you go.
That's been said about me five times today already. So that's fair.
Buck Magruder says, Mark or the Yellow, did you see or have thoughts about His House on Netflix? It was amazing for me.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, neither do I. So maybe he was trying to say Bly House. And he already, and Mark already said he's going to watch it over Thanksgiving weekend. So there's your answer for that, Mukbang. Thank you. Christopher Atkinson says, Mark, you're one of my favorite three MTS players, Movie Choose Monday players. I would say, who's my fourth, but I don't want to get the beat down.
So basically, whenever someone says you're my top three, that means I'm third.
That's a great way to put it.
So thanks.
Yeah. Who would be your fourth? I wonder to get a beat down. That's weird. Okay.
If it's Bibiani, I'm going to smack him.
Oh, there you go. Right there. Ben Rainer's thoughts of Disney's Christmas Carol with Jim Carrey. I actually love that movie. And yes, Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
I was just talking about this movie on Brad and Jen's show because we were talking about Zemeckis. And I think this is the last great movie that Robert Zemeckis directed. I am not a huge Jim Carrey fan. When I heard that he was going to be the basis of all the ghosts, I was like, oh, you're going to masturbate that long. Do it at home. Don't make me watch it for 2 hours. But I love it. I think it's probably after Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol, my second favorite adaptation of the material.
Wow.
I think it's a beautiful film. Technically, I think it's the best of his CG films. Mm. And I think it is really one of the most faithful to that story. I think it's a really great film. So thanks for bringing that up because, yeah, it should be watched. It's a really underappreciated film.
There you go. Yeah, I agree with you. I enjoy it. It's fantastic. And you're right. It's one of Carrey's rare good ones he's had over the last 15 to 20 years. You know?
Well, he's super talented. It's like it's just like with both Robin Williams or Robert Downey Jr., people like that. They're so talented and have so much are so always on that you need a wrangler.
Yeah.
It's why it's why I think with the CG and the motion capture, that brought him down a little and it channeled all that manic energy into a really focused way. And yeah. I do think his performances in the film are really, really great. Yeah. And I don't say that lightly because a lot of times he bugs the shit out of me.
Yeah. I don't like his Biden. I prefer Sudeikis as Biden.
He's not doing Biden. He's doing Fire Marshal Bill. I don't think he's ever seen Biden speak, but that's neither here nor there.
Mukbang says, "R just to transcribe your live chat. Mark, return soon. I don't know what anybody's at. This may be Outlaw's best ever show. Wow, I didn't know about Gina until research today. Thanks. Well, thank you, Mukbang. That's very kind of
thanks.
You. Yeah, fourth is Roka. Oh, that's what he meant. Like fourth round. Fuck you, Christopher. Mukbang again. Thank you. He says His House was big Netflix hit. Supernatural horror movies as a young couple from war-torn South Sudan seeks asylum in a fresh start in England. They're tormented by a sinister force. Oh, okay.
I have heard about this. Yes, but okay. Now I'll go watch it then because that is striking me as familiar now. If you want one horror movie, and it was the last movie I saw in the theaters before COVID that I can't say enough about, and I think is potentially going to get at least one Oscar nomination is The Invisible Man.
Oh yeah. That fucking movie is so good, dude.
When I heard Blumhouse and Elizabeth Moss, I was like, oh, no money and Scientology. She is jaw-droppingly good.
She needs to be nominated.
Yes. She's if you like Toni Collette in Hereditary, this is just as good of a performance.
Yep.
And James or not James Wan, Lee Wannell.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Upgrade. He leveled up.
Yeah.
This movie is an elegant. The first 20 minutes of this movie is a masterclass. Mm-hmm. This movie is so much better and smarter and about something like all good horror is, but it doesn't beat you over the head with it. And there are so many genuine, shocking things in it. Mm-hmm. It defies it. I saw it twice in the theater.
Yeah.
I paid both times to see this in the theater. It is a fantastic film, and her performance is sublime.
Yep. Agreed.
I don't think she'll win, but she absolutely deserves a nomination for that film. Yep.
The sound mixing on the film alone is incredible for a horror film. And Benjamin Wolfish's score, I tweeted out after I got out of the screening, because one of the last things I saw before we went into COVID, and I said, if this film, this score should be nominated for an Oscar, and if it isn't, it's a crime against film.
And the best thing about it was people in it acted like people act in real life.
Yes.
Is Aldous Hodge, is that the name of the cop?
Yeah, Aldous Hodge, yes.
Who's going to be playing Hawkman?
Yes.
His performance when the daughter thinks that Elizabeth, and this isn't a spoiler, when the daughter thinks that Elizabeth Moss hit her.
Yeah.
And he takes his daughter, in regular movie speak, he'd be like, get out of my house, I never want to see you again.
Right.
But because of all the trauma that Elizabeth Moss lived through in that abusive, awful relationship, he says to her, I need to take care of my daughter right now.
Yeah.
I'll be back. I need to take her someplace that isn't here. Right. And I was like, adults acting like adults in a genre film. You don't have to be Alien Covenant and let people be stupid to make the movie work. You can have the smarter your characters are, the more satisfying the movie is. And that movie, every single performance in that movie is pitch perfect.
Yep.
1,000% agree. And it's scary as hell too.
Yep. Storm Reid, who is the young girl, she is. Mm-hmm. I interviewed her for a set visit before they let me go at Collider, and I was lucky to go down to Australia and visit with them and mm-hmm. sit down with her. That young girl is, at some point she will move past acting and become a senator or possibly even a president down the road. She is so self-composed and intelligent for 13, 14 years old. I was blown away.
She was so watchable to see a kid that young in a low budget horror film create someone with such brief screen time that I fully know everything about that kid.
Yeah.
It's like you ordered a Big Mac and you got filet mignon on a fresh croissant with caviar and a bottle of Dom. It is not just a horror film. It is a great film. It is a crowd pleasing film that is both masterfully made and masterfully edited and nutritious. I can't say enough about it.
Agreed.
I'm jealous. There are people that haven't seen it, because I would love to watch it again that first time, because you know, we see so many movies, we go in and hope they're in focus if we're going to spend 2 hours there.
Yeah, right.
You know, the bar has lowered because there's so much stuff we consume.
True.
And there's nothing more satisfying than a movie you have zero or negative expectations on. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, no, hold my beer. This is good. And you're like, oh, thank you. I love having someone be a tour guide and tell me a great story. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And
I have no financial interest in this film. This is all honest passion.
Yep, you can tell. Let's see. Canon Rock says, for a fun horror movie, check out Love and Monsters. Okay.
That's the Dylan O'Brien one, right?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
I enjoy him. I think he's a really charming kid. I think when he gets the right vehicle, he could be a huge, huge, huge star, because he's got a Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise mix to him.
Yes.
He can do action, but he's just so likable. And he's good looking, but not too good looking for men to hate him.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Storm Reid is not 13. You're right. But she wasn't 17 when I interviewed her. She was 16. But she had such she was so composed. I was just blown away by her. But thank you for that clarification, Captain Penis. Let's see. Haskell, real quick. Hi, John and Mark. You've both done a lot of interviews for various things. Are there questions you wish you were asked but weren't? If so, what? Well, that's weird. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, the number one question I would like to be asked is, would you like the keys to Henry Cavill's house? That's the third time. By the Shakespeare rules of comedy, I will not mention him a fourth time, because then it's not funny anymore.
That
third one's hilarious. Trust me.
All right, we got one last person to bring in live. Making his comeback. It's been months since I've seen this son of a bitch, and now he's back here on the Outlaw Nation show. Hey, Calvin! What's going on, Calvin? How are you doing,
hey,
man?
Buddy.
Unmute your mic. Unmute your mic. Your mic, unmute it. Calvin, come on, Calvin. You can't. Are you? All right, hold on. There we go. All right, speak. Oh, no, you've muted yourself. Nope. Damn it, Calvin. You waited all this time.
Get a whiteboard.
Calvin. Oh, Calvin. I love you, man. I got to have to drop you out, bro, if you ain't got the mic working. Damn. All right. That's a shame. Calvin is a silent movie. Absolutely. All right, Mark, let's wrap it up there. You've been more than kind to spend over 2 hours with us here on the Outlaw Nation show. Brother, I can't tell you how much I love you, dude. There's no words for it. You're
right
the best.
Back at you, man.
Yeah, you know, and you take the time, and I appreciate it. And it's always a blast to spend time with you, no matter what we're doing, my man. So I miss you because, you know, absolutely. I haven't seen you, but thank you so much.
It's been since maybe last Christmas.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Jesus!
Because I don't think we were at the same last studio events at the same time.
Right. Oh wow, that says a long time, Jesus.
Well, for this year, I got you the best present. I got you a new administration, so I hope it fits.
Thank you so much.
I kept the receipt, so just let me know.
I just hope so because I don't know if you know, but just it came over the wire break, and my friend texted me this just a couple of seconds ago. Trump fired his head of election cybersecurity, who was debunking all those conspiracy theories. So fired him over Twitter, the coward. What a fuckstick, man. I hope to God he doesn't find a way to turn this thing around.
He cheats like
a motherfucker, man.
No, this time next year, we're going to be celebrating his conviction.
God, I hope so. I'd love it. All right, Mark, tell people where they can find you, man, and everything you got going on, my friends.
You can find me on Facebook and Twitter, and I have an Instagram account, but I've only ever posted one picture. So maybe that'll change. Mm. And upcoming matches, I'm not sure what has aired and what hasn't.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I don't even
know if technically we're still in the tournament or not.
We're still in the tournament, yes.
Okay. It's hard. I mean, we need it's like an astronomical chart. We need.
I know.
Things on. There's going to be some fun matches with me and Jeff and some really great teams, and we'll see where that goes.
We'll see how far either of us go in the tournament. If maybe we'll play each other in the final, we shall see.
It would be nice to have me and Slater play you and Dan. That would be a. Like Godzilla versus King Kong, right?
I'm saying I agree. 1,000% I agree. Are you still anything out there for people to purchase? Are Supergirl runs still happening? Yeah, Love is still out there?
My Supergirl run is collected in 2 trade paperbacks and features mostly art by the great Kevin Maguire, who did the great comedy Justice League book in the 80s. Torso is in print. Love is still available, still generating money for charity. Please feel free to bombard DC with texts and asking for the Manhunter trades to go back into print.
Right.
And some stuff, once again, potentially cool stuff. I'm just not allowed to talk about it. I know how stupid that is. I hate vague booking. But hopefully early on in the new year, I'll be able to talk about some cool stuff.
There you go. All right, Mark, I'll let you go. Feel free to get on with your night. I'll say goodbye to everybody here on the Outlaw Nation. You've been the best, brother. I love you.
Thanks, man. Love you too, guys. And everybody stay safe and have a great Thanksgiving.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, man. All right, there you go. You've spent some time with the great Mark Andrako, the android himself. We had a lot of fun talking about a lot of things going on in the world and answering your questions. Thank you, everybody, for your Streamlabs and your Super Chats. You all were very kind in the second hour to send so many of them in. And thanks to everybody who came in live. Listen, you guys are the lifeblood. You guys and you gals are the lifeblood of the Outlaw Nation outlet and Outlaw Nation channels. We build and build and build up this little engine that could, trying to get more and more attention and more people on here to enjoy the content we do here on the Outlaw Nation channel. Don't forget, after tonight, tomorrow, Geek Buddies will be dropping on the Outlaw Nation channel as well. We've got a new Jedi Way coming. Laura Kelly and I have a little fun talking about some Star Wars stuff. That'll be later on in the week. And Impolite Truths now. The Impolite Truths show is going to be weekly. Now, every Thursday at 4 p.m. PT live on the Outlaw Nation channel, me and Dorina Arellano talking about all the latest going on in the world of politics. We're not done, folks. That election is over, But all the intrigue and the drama and the political maneuvering is still going on, and after January 20th as well. So we're going to be keeping that show going as long as we can. Weekly, 4 p.m. PT now on Thursdays, a little bit earlier time so more people can watch. And, of course, Top 10 coming up later on. Top 10 dropped today, the new episode. The Top 10 dropped today, so please make sure you go and listen to that on the Top 10 podcast feed or over on the Top 10 YouTube channel. And if you missed it last week, we dropped the commitments on the Cinephiles that dropped as well. We went back in time to revisit that film and talk about how much we loved it. And this week, coming up on the Cinephiles, part one of The Untouchables, that film, 1987 film from Brian De Palma, written by David Mamet, in honor of the passing of Sean Connery. Steve and I are getting together with Shannon McClung from the Geek Buddies and our friend who's Steve Jones, who's a comic book artist and creator as well. All four of us getting together to talk about Sean Connery and talk about The Untouchables Part 1 this Friday. Look for it coming out on the Cinephiles. Is that everything I got going? Oh, yeah. And then a review of The Crown coming soon, sometime this week, depending on when I can schedule it with my co-host on that review. We're going to get that out to you guys as soon as possible. Okay, that's everything so far, I think, going on. And don't forget, Friday mornings with the Outlaw, talking about the week's big entertainment news there Friday at 8:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. as well. All right. Much love to all you guys. You guys were incredible. I'll see you next week when we have another great guest here on the Outlaw Nation show. And I end the show like I end every show. Whatever you need to do to get through the next second, next minute, next hour, next day, next week, next month, next year, I want you to do that. You know, I know it's tough out there. I know you question a lot of things. I know we've had some rough times over the last year with COVID and everything that's happened. But I think some of us, or a lot of us, are starting to glimpse a little light at the end of the tunnel. And I hope that's bringing so many of you, I guess the word again, hope, back into your life and possibilities, opening doors to possibilities more and more in your life. Hopefully that is a feeling that's starting to build inside you about the world again. And I carry that with you and take that with you and come back and join us again next week and every week here on the Outlaw Nation show, because I love you and I want you around and I want you with us and I want you to see where we take this thing when it finally crosses that line and is where we want it to be. All right. And you all are going to be the reason why. So thank you so much. Much love to all you guys. Much love, much special love to my Outlaw Nation patrons as well. If you want to be part of the Patreon, we do all the hangouts. Going to be doing the shows real soon. All this stuff going on. Going to be going back possibly and doing my commentaries of my matches, my old Schmodown matches, all these shows, Criterion Corner, Ask the Outlaw. All these shows are coming back. The Outlaw Nation Debate, the OK Corral. That's all going to come back very, very soon here. And if you want to be a part of that, you go to patreon.com/John Rocha right there. You can follow me at The Rocha Says on Twitter and on Instagram. And don't forget to hit subscribe down below there and give us some more love here on the Outlaw Nation channel. All right. Take care, everybody. Be well, be safe, wear a mask, and we'll see you next week. Have a great weekend. Take care.